But just try and table it just on table it till it's come back.
Ready to go?
Yes.
All right, are we all ready to go? We can get started. Hopefully our time. Looks like we had a long meeting. Well, good evening or afternoon, everybody, and I'm sure we'll be here well into the evening. My name is Jude Benavides, and I'd like to go ahead and call today's meeting of the Brownsville Public Utilities Board to order December 13th. I have 5 o'clock. Let's go with confirmation of quorum. I do
have a quorum with
5 board members present. Is there anyone online?
The mayor's trying to log in.
Okay. They'll be joining us. And does anyone know if Ms. O'Quinn is joining us online?
She was going to try also.
Okay. Online?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. So we do have quorum. Any public comments?
No.
No public comments on the record? All right. Thank you. Next item will be the consent agenda item. It is a rather long item, so if there is, I will entertain a motion to approve these in mass, or want to go through them individually, just let me know. I move for all together. I have a first from Ms. Langley all together, and a second from Ms. Sines. Thank you. Any further discussion?
I had a couple of items.
Okay, Sean. Please go ahead. Speak into the mic there.
This is Mike on. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Just quickly, a couple comments on item number 4, which is that hydro truck that PUB is purchasing. How many does PUB have in operation right now? Do we have another hydro truck that's operating right now providing service?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if someone that's listening in can provide that.
You want me to get Diane in?
Yes. Well, maybe I'll say Fred might be better. He's our fleet manager. Either one of the two.
This is Diane. Jose is on the line. He can also probably answer better.
Yes, good evening. This is Jose Cuellar, the Fleet Services Manager. Currently, we have 2 in service, 2 VACONs in service. And the one that is being requested to replace, that's the older one of the two.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Thank you. The other item that I wanted to touch on is the increase in the annual maintenance for the software. Well, actually, item number 1, 2, and 3. I know there are different vendors that are providing this software. Is there? And I read the information that things are expanding. How long have we been operating with the current system, providing service to PUB without this expanded additional memory and additional servers and et cetera?
Mr. Board Member, on item number 1, that's the customer information software. We implemented that software in June of 2000. And we've been using it since that time. That's the software that we use to collect all the information on the customer, do the billing, collections, meter reading.
Since 2000, y'all been using it?
Yes, sir. We implemented it in 2000, and we've been upgrading it ever since.
Okay.
So it's working fine for us.
Okay. And all these are interrelated, all these programs and software programs?
Well, for item 1, basically, it describes all the different things that it does. In other words, there are different pieces of software. Cayenta Utilities is the core software. Uniface is the report writing language. Actuate is a report writer. Uniface is the language that does the code that the software is written in. Oracle is the database. So, yes, they're all related. I mean, it's like one package, but they, different pieces of it.
Department reviews. Do we have a contract?
Yes.
Do our attorneys review this contract?
Yes.
Right. The other thing, just, John, we're going out of service. This is not on the agenda, but do y'all have an auction schedule or something coming up?
Yeah, Diane can probably address that. I think we had just had an online, I think, Diane, right?
Yes, sir. We just had for the vehicles, surplus vehicles, we had an online auction. It was held at the end of October, the beginning of November.
Twice a year, once a year?
We do the vehicle auctions as we get the vehicles in. Once we compile enough vehicles, then we'll have the auction. We don't have it like for one or two vehicles. We usually do it with a larger amount. So as the new vehicles start coming in, we start putting the old ones at the old service yard and preparing them for the auction.
Okay. Just one last item. Item number 10, if somebody can explain a little bit to me how this process works when you have an item for, let me see, it's $556,000, but the labor is $532,000. Your tools and materials are $23,000. How does that happen? Labor, how is it distributed?
I don't know if Orlando's on or Alonso, but if they're not, then I'll provide a response. Okay. It is number 6, just while they are trying to come on, it is a like 1950s vintage steam turbine. So the turbine itself sits on the turbine deck. And so somebody went by there one time to tour it. So he sees that it's on the deck. In order to get in there, there's a lot that needs to be done to take the shell apart to do an inspection. And then once you do that, there's very heavy equipment that's necessary to bust the bolts out and then to report them back into their specified port ranges. So it is very labor intensive. It's also specialized tools that need to be brought in to be able to take it apart and then redress it, put it back together.
I understand that, and I see that the tools and the materials is $23,000, but it's $500,000 in labor. How do y'all track it? How do you calculate it? Are there personnel within PUB that are watching this?
Yes, there are. There's the plant manager is an engineer, mechanical engineer. There also is a maintenance person that oversees the maintenance of the and repair of the unit. There's another couple of engineers that are at the plant that are mechanically minded and mechanical engineers that do watch the work as it's completed to ensure that tolerances are met, to ensure that the unit goes back in as it's designed to be included. Again, Orlando Lozano is the plant manager and can add to what I've said.
Sure. You know, another question I have is, at what point do y'all determine that you're not using all $526,000 for labor? At what point do y'all determine that you only use $200,000 or $300,000?
There's non-destructive testing that goes on where you put a scope into the unit itself and you do take pictures of it with a small camera to identify possible problems. But you never really know until you take the unit apart the degree and severity of the damage. So you have to estimate that unit ran so many times and by the manufacturer's specs, it's definitely time for it to be repaired again, but you may find additional things that got damaged. A piece of something that breaks loose and it causes greater damage downstream. So you don't know until you open it up completely.
But is there a possibility that we'll use less than $500,000 for this for the scope of work?
If I may interject, yes, there is a possibility. Every time we open up this machine, there's always something more than we expect. We know we have an issue with the machine because we postponed our last outage in preparation for Winter Storm Uri, and we ran out of time to get back into it, so we ran with this problem. This year, we do have to get back into the machine again to correct this particular problem that we're certain is in there. But as always, because of in removal of parts and mainly the spreading them out, we also have to contract a what we call technical field assistance or engineering directly from the OEM. And what they do before we open it up, they take the position and clearances of all the moving parts so that we can, when we put it back together again, We recalculate based on all the clearances, again, based on anything we replace in the machine. That's a good portion of the labor that you mentioned, because that also includes what we call technical field assistance. If it turns out that we have what we call no-go damage in the machine, that is to say something that we said, going back together and we know there's a large problem, we might have to address it then. I'd almost also have to mention that we're not doing a complete overhaul, because we're going in specifically to address this particular problem I mentioned earlier. The cost of an overhaul is well over $1 million if we were to do it, you know, by the numbers. So in this respect, we're going in there to address whatever needs to be addressed in order to get the machine ready for the February winter preparations.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at checks and balances. I know that y'all have people on staff there that are watching this. There has to be a way that y'all are calculating this and monitoring it, documenting.
Yes, sir.
Over $500,000. Very small amount of tools and materials compared, but thank you for your information.
The inside of the turbine is very few moving parts and pieces. It's a lot of steel. So when you see that there's a small amount of charge, it could be the gaskets, it could be thrust bearing, things like that. Those are the things that wear out. So that to get to those is what the problem is. You got to pick it apart and get it in there, get it measured, get it balanced.
Personnel doing this work or external people coming from out of town?
Well, we assist them as they come in.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I would encourage any board member on something like this, Mr. Sampaio went down there, but to come down at the plant while it's being worked on, you can observe the work so you can see what.
Yeah, maybe I'll get a chance to take a look at it.
That's a great idea, and likely when it's opened up, so you can, you know, you look at the outside, you don't know what's on the inside. It's opened up would be a good time to speak about.
When was Unit 6 manufactured?
The 50s, I'm not sure exactly.
But sometime in the 50s.
Wow.
So historic unit.
We're keeping it performed very well during Winter Storm Uri.
We want to back in service in February.
But they don't build them like that anymore. They build them a lot more fragile.
Thank you. Thank all of you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Any further discussion? All right. Heard. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Heard. Since agenda items pass unanimously. All right. Next item will be the closed meeting portion. In this portion of the meeting, we will be discussing items 1 and 2. Item number 1, meeting with board's legal counsel for advice about contemplated and pending court and administrative litigation and on matters of the duty of the attorneys under the Texas Disciplinary Rules of Professional Conduct conflicts with Chapter 551.071. Item number 2, consideration and approval of the Brownsville Public Utility Board's Energy Risk Management Program and recommended policy updates in accordance with Section 551.086. After which we will reconvene to open meeting. I'll entertain a motion to move to close meeting.
So moved.
First from Mr. Sampaio and a second from Ms. Langdon. Any further discussion? Excuse me. None heard. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None heard. We have authority to move to close session. Please let us know when we are ready to proceed.
There's no crystal ball, right? So you can try. Sometimes you don't get. All right, then, Brett.
they're going to read a motion. I'm going to read them.
Yes.
Are we ready to go?
Yes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks. We have moved on to the items for individual consideration. Item number one is consideration and possible action on items discussed in closed meeting. Under item two, in closed session, we heard about the energy risk management program and the recommended policy updates and agreed to make those changes. We had to vote on that in open session, so I'll read the recommended action from staff, which was BPUB staff recommends approval of the BPUB energy risk management policy updates. Are there any additional questions? And if not, I will entertain a motion to approve.
So move.
I have a first from Mr. Capaio.
Second.
A second from Mr. Rendon. Any further discussion? None heard. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None heard. The item passes. Thank you. That is it for the items that required action in closed session. Moving on to item number two, Mr. Bruciak, your report.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, we have the board calendar attached, and Mike's going to do his financial report. I did want to report some good news. We have moved about 80% into the new annex building this last 2 weeks. And we will be, there's two areas we're still lacking on before it's fully operational. And we'll get most of that done, I would hope, in the next couple of weeks here. But we intend to have the next board meeting. The board meeting room is nearly ready. There's a little bit of electronic stuff we've got to take care of. But any board member would like to come over this week or certainly next week to tour it, we're ready for that. Like I said, there's a couple areas that haven't been moved. And what we're trying to do is maximize the space in the new building and the old building to deal with COVID situation, keep spacing, keep distancing. We have enough room now to properly do that. And right now we're trying to work out some of the things that aren't working right. One of the elevators didn't work, the door, you know, a couple of those things, but we're really close to being, I think, being there by the end of the month for sure, 100%. So on that. And we'll invite the board to come by and we can tour the facility. It's a beautiful facility, operating real well, and I think you'll enjoy it. Mike, you want to go ahead and financial?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
So good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'll be presenting the financial performance report for the period of October 31, 2021. You should all have a copy of the report in your packet. We'll get started on page two. We got line one, operating revenues of $20,680,183. After we add in other revenues, interest from investments, and other non-operating income, we arrive at line seven, gross revenues of $21,792,714. In accordance with the bond ordinance, we do back out fuel and energy costs of $7,983,499. Our SRWA contribution of $509,656, and we arrive at line 12, adjusted gross revenues of $13,299,559. This is the basis for the 10% City of Brownsville transfer calculation. Moving on to page 3, line 15, total expenses are $4,788,323. After we add in the debt service obligations of $2,277,871, we arrive at line 17, total requirements of $7,066,194. We back this out of the adjusted gross revenues reported on the previous page, and we also back out the COP usage of $413,466, and we arrive at a balance available to surplus of $5,819,899. This surplus balance was then used to transfer to the City of Brownsville net of their COB usage, $916,490, leaving a balance of $4,903,409 for POB usage. Now, that money was then used to fund the $1.3 million of the fuel adjustment subaccount, $615,000 into the CIP fund, CIP funding, and $166,000 for the commercial paper defeasance, for total transfers or uses of $2,115,787. leaving a balance of surplus of $2,787,000 for the 1 month ended in October. Under note one, we see that the each utility positively contributed to this balance available. On page five, we have the graph comparison of current actual budget and prior year actual for certain accounts. Adjusted gross revenues for the current month of $13.3 million are in line with budget, and they are about $14 million below last year's same month level. And the difference there represents the Oakley Union sale that was completed in October 2020. Fuel and energy cost of $8 million is $2.7 million above budget and about $2.8 million above prior year's levels. The O&M expenses of $4.8 million are $2.3 million under budget and about $600,000 over last year's level. On page six, we have the graph comparison of the electric sales. We're comparing prior year actual to the current year budget and the five-year average. We see that the current electric unit sales are above all the other metrics. Year-to-date, electric sales are $9.5 million kWh above prior year-to-date sales, representing an 8.2% increase. On page seven, we have the water sales comparisons. Year-to-date water sales are 8.3 million gallons above prior year-to-date sales, representing about a 1.5% increase. On page eight, the wastewater flows year-to-date are 95,000 gallons under prior year-to-date sales, about a 0.02% decrease there. On page nine, we have the residential electric bill comparison based on 1,000 kWh of electric sales. Here we are comparing to other investor-owned utilities. We see that the IOU average is at $128.03. PUB's average bill for October was at $102, so we're significantly below the average. PUB is the second lowest among these 11 entities. On page 10, we have that same comparison, but now comparing ourselves to other municipally owned utilities. You see that the MOU average is at $107.54. So here again, PUB is under that average, and we are fourth among the nine entities that are reported on here. So this concludes the financial performance presentation, which was presented to demonstrate compliance with the bond ordinance and flow of funds. Also attached is a balance sheet and a statement of revenues, expenses, and changes in net position as of October 31, 2021, for your review. I do apologize. I have here that we weren't able to provide you with the list of the legal and engineering expenses with your board packet. But they were provided, and you should have a copy of that in front of you right now. So looking at the engineering fees for October, we've expended $10,000 out of the $2.5 million budget. On the legal side, we've expended $177,085 out of the $1.7 million budget. So we'll continue to monitor that on a monthly basis and report back to the board. That concludes my report. Does anybody have any questions?
Any questions?
Thank you.
One other thing, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I failed to mention, we are going to go to the City Commission meeting tomorrow night and do our first quarterly update on PUB activities ongoing and plan going forward. So that'll be our first meeting with the City Council tomorrow night. Management team will be there. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you very much. Completes item number two. Moving on to item number three, consideration and approval of minutes of the October 11, 2021 meeting. I'll entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
First, Mr. Plyle. Second, Ms. Langley. Any further discussion? None heard. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? October 11 meeting notes are approved. Item number four, presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding the Brownsville Public Utility Board's 2019 to 2024 strategic plan.
Good evening, Chair and Board members. My name is Amelia Guerra, the Director of Human Resources. Tonight we have Darren Thomas with us from Raftellis. Raftellis is our consultant for strategic planning services. And we are implementing our 2019 to 2024 strategic plan, and Darren will be providing an update to the board of the plan.
Thank you.
So I'll turn it over to Darren.
Good evening. It's good to be with you. Darren Thomas here. I'm attempting to share my screen, and if maybe somebody could confirm for me whether or not you're actually seeing the PowerPoint presentation I'd like to speak from.
Yes, we are.
Okay, wonderful. I'm going to be providing the board with an update on progress of implementation of the PUB strategic plan. I believe you have a copy of the slide deck in your packet, if I'm not mistaken.
We do.
Okay, perfect. All righty. So three things I'd like to cover with the board tonight. I want to just provide a strategic plan overview. And then one of the things that we try to do pretty routinely is to provide updates on implementation progress. So we'll also be doing that. The timing of this update to the board is perfect because we're coming into the end of the calendar year, and then we'd like to kind of just touch on looking ahead, what's on the horizon for 2022. So that's what I'd like to cover with the board. I'd like to simply start, and just to remind the board that the organization has a very rich history of developing strategic plans and then being very intentional with the implementation of those plans under the GM's leadership. Raptellus became involved working on the current update of the strategic plan back in 2018. We completed the five-year strategic plan toward the end of 2019, and best practice is really to try to look at that plan on an annual basis and figure out just how much the organization can focus on to be able to advance the strategic plan on a year-to-year basis. So we do that through generating annual work plans. And so we created an annual work plan that actually started in 2020. Of course, the pandemic hit, and so we've been kind of dealing with that through 2020 and also through 2021. Within the strategic plan, this is based on a large amount of stakeholder input received. There are really six areas of focus or goals, or sometimes referred to as issues. You see them shown on the screen right now, and they are customer and community engagement, workforce development and continuity, organizational preparedness and resiliency, process improvement, reliable infrastructure, and then lastly, technology and innovation. The strategic plan is really put together trying to be intentional with measuring outcomes, which will serve as indicators of achievement of these goals. And then, of course, there are specific strategies that were identified that the organization desired to focus on to be able to propel each of these six focus areas or six goals forward. Strategy execution typically happens through the effective execution of the strategies. And so what I'm going to be talking about tonight is really how has progress gone over the last 2 years during a pandemic? And then what are some of the key metrics and outcomes that that we're able to share at this point?
Hey, Darren, this is John. Is there a way you could enlarge your screen a little bit?
Boy, probably, John. You're stressing my IT capabilities, though.
We don't want to lose you, but we're...
Yeah, you're squinting. You know what? Let me ask you this. So I will... You know what? Bear with me, John. In the next couple of slides, I think things will get a little bit bigger. I'm going to struggle to kind of figure out how to actually zoom in. But I do want to just point out, this is the plan that is actually in the strategic planning document. It's called the strategic framework. And what you see presented here on this screen is a similar looking kind of representation on the strategic framework. But really what it focuses on is it starts to reveal to the board progress of implementation, and I'm going to talk about each of these six areas, which hopefully you'll be able to see the slides a little bit better when I transition. A couple of things to note. Strategy execution happens best when we're able to assign accountabilities. And so if you see here, each of these focus areas or goals has executive level sponsorship, which you see presented on this slide. And then we also have what we call goal champions. And these are managers within the organization that are tasked with kind of helping each of these particular areas advance. And so accountability is an important thing. The other thing that is important with successful strategy execution is trying to keep track of progress, implementation of progress. And I will talk about each of these progress bars that you see in some upcoming slides. But we do this to be able to be very intentional about, hey, what are we planning on doing? What are we going to focus on? Who's going to do it? When is it going to be done by? So that's what these bars actually represent here. And then lastly, you see out here on the wing on the side is the actual outcome measures. We talk a little bit about the measures that most closely indicate outcome achievement. And so outcome measures is very difficult, but I think so far within the body of this strategic plan, I think we're making good progress bringing forward good outcome measures. So with that, I'm just going to get into it. And hopefully, John, these are a little easier to see.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So what I was going to try to do is just talk through each of the six goal areas or focus areas, if you will. And I'll start with with customer and community engagement. So what you see presented in front of you, there's some text in here that talks about what the goal of this particular focus area is. And in this case, it's to increase awareness of the value of BPUB through outreach, open communication, and excellent customer service. What you see shown on the top are the progress bars. And really what these progress bars are, a measure of implementation progress over the last couple of years as we've been very intentional in implementing the strategies of this particular area. So we have three strategies. For customer and community engagement, the first one is about outreach and engagement. The second one is around streamlining communication. And then the last one is a focus on customer service. Those numbers that you see, 88/90, 97, 88 is the actual percentage of completeness or progress that the organization has been able to make against its defined implementation work plan. So here we are at the end of 2021. Of course, all of those would read close to 100% accomplished. So the coloration is blue is good, means we're on track. We basically did what we planned to do. What you see, gold or yellow, depending on what your screen looks like, we're a little behind, and we have some catching up to do. What you're going to find as I move through each of these six areas is there's some areas that are red, and we're behind. And we know why we're behind. Principally, we're behind because of the pandemic. But it also allows us to be able to reflect on, okay, if we're behind, then let's bring these things forward if they remain important, and we'll focus on them in 2022. So overall, customer and community engagement, there's a lot of good work that has been done that maps back to the strategic plan that indicates good organizational progress. So now I also want to provide you a little more detail because you're probably wondering, what's behind each of these strategies? Well, this is an explosion of the strategies that you're looking at with a little more detail. So as an example, outreach and engagement. The real focus for the last couple of years has been to document our current activities, what we're doing, take good inventory. That is 100% done. We completed that. The next one is to evaluate best practices. Peer organizations outside our industry. The next one was kind of assess gaps. Where could we potentially enhance our outreach and engagement efforts? The Speakers Bureau, this is an internal initiative to be able to leverage the employees of the organization to be customer-facing, engaged outward to the community. Having a plan, comprehensive outreach and engagement plan. This is also something that was done. So what you see here is really just a snapshot of what is going on inside the work plan. Your eyes will probably take you down here to the customer survey. We had hoped to get a customer survey out on the street this year. We may still do that. The draft of the survey is currently available. We just have not launched the survey. But again, in the strategy one, excellent progress in light of the fact that we're dealing with a pandemic. streamline communication. Everything we plan to do for 2021, we accomplished. And so lots of positive progress there. And then on the customer service side, the only thing we're really needing to catch up on is the customer survey. So that's how and you'll see these slides repeated as I move through the presentation for some of the other focus areas. So that's progress. Now I want to talk about performance. Now, what I'm showing you here are developing dashboards. This is a currently we have a few ticks that we need to fix in here, but really what we're trying to do is settle into a set of outcome measures that we can share with the board as we provide updates periodically on what's going on inside the strategic plan. So in this case, again, the metric dashboard that is around customers and community engagement. Really, there's several areas that we're trying to kind of pay attention to. If you look on the left side, this is just a quick view. What you're seeing is data that represents the most current measure. We don't have data yet available to present regarding the Speakers Bureau, but we will do that the next time we provide an update. We're tracking social media impressions. This is a measurement of how many eyeballs actually are seeing some of our social media blasts. We like to keep track of customer shout-outs. When customers call and provide us with a positive story, a reinforcing story, we keep track of that. You see the last measure was 6. That's measured on a monthly basis. Call center volume, the number of calls that we received, last count was 25,906. And then the measurement of in-person appointments, we're bringing this forward because as the customer service center starts taking in-person appointments, we're wanting to kind of track that. So you see these graphed out. You see the trend in call center volume here. You see the trend in in-person appointments. We also like to kind of take data points occasionally and lay them on top of each other. So you see here the call center volume goes as the call center volume is plotted, the amount of in-person appointments is plotted as well. Social media impressions, you see we're pretty steady. This is back to the winter storm. So we have a big, big jump in that period. Customer service shout-outs and then Speakers Bureau engagements, which I mentioned, we don't have data for that. But we will be populating these for the board to be able to kind of visually see some of the key outcomes as we move through time with strategy execution. So I've gone through one of our 6 focus areas, and this is the summation of what's happening in terms of the strategic plan implementation on customer and community engagement. I'm going to pivot to the second goal area, which is workforce development and continuity. This particular area is success is when we're able to attract, develop, and retain the workforce of today and tomorrow. We are focusing on executing 3 strategies. Those strategies are about recruitment and retention of staff. They're about development of staff. And then they're also about compensation and benefits plan, which is a key mechanism to make sure that we can attract and retain top talent. We've been impacted by COVID in this particular focus area for obvious reasons, which I'll show you here in just a second. So progress it varies a little bit. Over the last couple of years. So we're behind in the retention and recruitment. We're behind in the career development. Made reasonable progress in compensation and benefits. So what's behind that? Focusing on recruitment and retention, the main drag that we have had to deal with, obviously, has been the pandemic. Much of the planned work activities is in-person related. So we're still kind of coming through that to the point where we can play some catch up. So really what this means is that we may not have gotten to all of the work that we wanted to get to. This just means that over time we'll be able to advance some of these particular tactical work items forward as we move through time and become able to engage in person more frequently. Similarly, on the career development side, we're a bit behind in our career development planning. We're also a bit behind in identifying resources for development skills. And then we've not been able to advance the promotion opportunities work that we had planned on doing. The workforce development continuity has made a lot of good progress in the area of compensation and benefits, and you see that depicted here. So the compensation communications is complete, and reasonable progress has been made regarding tactical work activities around the employee incentive program and the benefits program. The outcome measures that we're trying to track at this point, really three things. We're trying to monitor voluntary turnover, and you can see kind of the trend going back in this year. It's a little hard to see, but that's as April, May, June, July, August, September, October. And so you see the voluntary turnover, and these are actually the numbers. The most current month, we had one. We're also tracking the number of new hire turnover. These would be employees that have been with us for less than 12 months. So we're trying to kind of pay attention to that and make sure that we're not losing a new talent as it joins us. And then we're also tracking internal advancements. And you kind of see the trend of all of these KPIs over time. And we'll be working on, we may add some additional metrics to the dashboard, which incidentally, this data is data that the organization already has, and I believe the board sees a number of these things. So we just brought them forward and kind of related them more specifically to the strategic plan. So that's what's going on in workforce development. The third area of focus strategically is in the area of organizational preparedness and resiliency. That is defined by providing reliable services, by identifying, preparing, and responding to challenges and risks. Really three strategies that the organization has been focused on over the last year to 2 years, about risk mitigation, understanding critical systems, and then finally making sure that we have good effective resource plans. This kind of shows you visually the progress that's been being made, reasonable progress in all three of these strategies. Some of the ones that are in red, we're just a little bit behind. We've got some work to do in identifying a risk management model and then identifying long-range planning needs. Again, these are tactical work activities that we will probably bring forward into 2022. In terms of performance, things we're tracking that are indicators of how healthy we are in organizational preparedness and resiliency, the number of open positions. We have about 64 open positions, plus or minus. That represents about 10% of the approved positions in the organization. We also try to keep track of overtime costs as a percentage of labor costs. Based on where we're at this year, that's about 5.46%. And some of these things are benchmarkable. Just kind of knowing what I know about benchmarks, that's not an unreasonable number. It's something worth watching over time. The DART rate is the days away restricted or transferred due to injury or illness. We're at about 4.2%, and this is throughout this whole year. Again, that's a reasonable number kind of based on industry standards. We're trying to keep track of safety training hours, and then we will plot safety training hours against DART rate. Moving right along, process improvement. We have a goal that's about continuously exploring and enhancing how we operate to produce effective and efficient services. Three strategies. This is the detail of each of those strategies. You can see that progress in the centralization of data and results has been very strong, and that is the gold bars. And you can see that we have some work to do in change management. And then strategy one, programmatic approach. So again, we're carrying many of these things forward. We've been impacted by the pandemic, and that's why some of these things haven't been able to get totally accomplished. Things that we're measuring. We're trying to measure the number of completed improvement initiatives. We started this year with 10. We added 3 to it, so we are actively working continuous improvement initiatives inside the organization. We have 7 current active improvement projects going on. We also are trying to monitor the number of employees that are engaged through process improvement. The last count was 44. We're also trying to monitor the number of employees that are trained formally in lean and continuous improvement. I think this number, we say one, I think it might be a bit higher than that. I think three or four, but we will update this data for the board. Reliable infrastructure really held up by three primary strategies. It is about maintaining, improving, and investing in infrastructure to ensure dependable service. You can see kind of the explosion of tactical work activity that's going on inside this particular area. Most of the progress that has been made focuses a lot on the asset management pilot project, which is a project that was really going full steam prior to the pandemic, and I think we've hit some bumps in the road. But there has been work accomplished in most of these areas. Much of this will be carried over into 2022. Things we're measuring, keeping track of water loss. Last time we had data last month was 3.8% of treated water. I have seen much higher numbers across the industry, so I feel like we're in reasonable shape there. And then your eyes will show you the water main breaks, sanitary overflows, wastewater breaks, and then also keeping track of the electrical outage in terms of hours over time. So this is a, and this is the last goal area, it's technology and innovation. Really what we're focused on is identifying and implementing innovative solutions and embracing technology advancements so we can better serve our customers. Again, three strategies that are driving this goal area. And again, kind of a window into the detailed work plan. There's a fair amount of red in here. The technology group has done a lot to keep the organization moving during the pandemic and is now coming up to speed on executing many of these strategies. And so we have work to do as we move into 2022. The dashboard that we've created for this last area really focuses on the percentage of online payments, which is a good indicator of how successful our technology deployment is being used by our customers. The number of customers that are receiving their bills using the e-bill process. And then we've also been tracking the number of service connections, whether opens a new service or service turnoffs, the number of those that have been accomplished with online technology, that the new technology that's been developed. So that gives you a really fast overview of what's going on inside of the strategic plan. What we envision doing in 2022 is finishing those things that we needed to get accomplished previously, bringing those forward, and then taking a look at what additional tactical work items we need to focus on to continue to advance the strategic plan. We will continue to collect data, refine these dashboards, and then we are conducting internal quarterly sessions with the staff, and then providing the board updates on a semi-annual basis. So that is all I have in terms of updating the progress of implementation of the strategic plan.
Thank you. This is Jude Benavides. I have a couple questions, if you don't mind. One, I think you answered right at the tail end, but I wasn't sure, if you were talking about staff or board. How often would you update the board on our progress on this strategic plan? Every year? Can you hear me?
Right. Yes, I can. I believe the plan was twice annually. So
twice annually. Okay.
Maybe mid-year.
Okay. I thought that you'd mentioned directly to staff. My other question is, are you getting all the information you need to keep your dashboards up to date, and is there anything we can do to help?
You're in great shape. I work with utilities across the entire country, and I would say that the quality and the availability of your data is better than most. So, we're going to continue to refine it. There are some areas where we might have some data gaps, but that is not a problem for this organization.
Okay, thank you. That's all my questions. Anybody else?
Is this item online? Is this strategic plan online?
I'm not sure we have it on yet because it's a live document that we're doing.
Is there plans to have it?
Yes, some parts of it, because there is some competitive parts of it on the electric side that's not put out. But my concern on the plan is we are behind. We're a year behind where we should be, which reflected after. I was talking to Dr. Guerra this morning, and she's lost 140 employees in this past year. A lot of that is COVID-related retirements, and we just don't have enough staff to get this plan. We're going to have to do some things in 22 to get it right to ship and get some of this stuff done or get more realistic on the goals that we're setting. We just don't have to outsource a lot of this work to get it done. So,
And we may even want to consider perhaps revising the plan as a result.
Well, that's what I was going to say, make it more realistic.
Yeah.
Because we did lose a whole year with that amount of employees.
When did we adopt this?
19, it was.
2019. Yeah. So this is the second full year.
Yes.
The plan. How closely does this reflect what employees and department heads and our organization actually focuses on and has as a priority?
I mean, not enough by the results of the colors.
Well, and
you know, I mean, not just being honest, not any picking anybody.
But I guess that's my question is maybe, you know, this was a document that was crafted 2 years ago, 3 years ago, or perhaps even before. I don't know how long the planning process was. I mean, is it worth, as Ju said, is it time to maybe look at it and see if this really aligns with what the priorities are? I mean, as an example, I'm looking at it and looking at the measures, and they look like great measures. Nowhere on there does it say anything about what happened in February.
Right.
And that to me would be a pretty important indicator. And also nowhere on here does it say we lost $50 million this year. Right. I'm not saying that should be the priority, but maybe somewhere on there.
Yeah.
One of the things that we look at and say, hey.
Yeah. In the past plans we've done, they change.
Yeah.
They change from year to year for whatever reason. And it may be a time to take a look at it. And, you know, this isn't what we need to focus on. It's this.
Well,
we'll do that.
Yeah. I mean, this is a strategic plan, right? And then there's the operational reality. I'm not arguing with you, but I'm used to seeing those as a separate, and perhaps maybe we could present those at the same time. And I think that was a great job as far as being very, obviously being frank and almost painfully frank about how far behind we are on this. But that, I think everybody is, and we acknowledge the reasons why. But I agree with Mr. Sampaio in the sense that I think maybe there's some operational components of that. And there's some data on that, and we're going to be sharing any of that information. We'd be careful that we don't expose too much and
right.
Whether or not the reality, I know these are just printouts and examples, but for example, the fact that there is no safety hours reported, you know, via versus the DART rate or the training hours per employee for that month, or apparently for as far back, I can't quite read the x-axis. I'm sure that's not the case. I hope that's not the case.
No, it's not. Some of that data wasn't in the reports that you all get.
Right.
So it wasn't easily extracted. But yeah, I think it's safe to say that the organization has a pretty robust safety training program. We just don't have the data to present.
My point was not so much to ding on that and to pinpoint that, but I call that out as an example of the fact that a metrics dashboard should be fundamentally easily accessible and up to date, and I'm all in favor of that. I think it gives everyone from the board to the public to anyone who is interested in tracking the real-time status of what is happening, all the way from emergency operations and customer outage, which is going to be assisted by our smartening up the network in our system, to tracking how we've done in hours or customer outage hours and reporting that to the public. I think that is, in my opinion, I'm not speaking for anybody else, would go a long way towards
meeting some of the concerns that have been expressed to me from the public about what is happening operationally. And I know it's a headache for the operational folks. Trust me, I've been there. But it's something that we need to do.
Sure.
In the past, we correlated an agenda item to one of the strategic plan.
Yeah.
And for certain, like say, sinus rate measurement.
Right.
If you can go back to that, then hopefully maybe we can make it more of a tie-in to the plan. So that the plan is always on the plan.
Yeah.
That's something too.
That would be great.
Yeah. I mean, you could say that anything that is on the agenda for the board's approval should be directly tied to the strategic plan, or else,
right?
Why is it, in front of the board?
It is. We just didn't show it.
Curious, what it was addressing, like refresh of hiring someone to do a strategic plan. That's part of the end of the life of it. We probably need to go back to that.
Okay.
Staff focus more. Which of these items, the agenda items, tie into?
Yeah, and again, maybe there are some things, given the reality and given what's happened in the last 3 years since this document was formed, perhaps staff has a couple of recommendations as to, maybe some of those metrics don't really reflect priorities for staff or for the board. And why measure it, and have them work on, have that all the paperwork and the data. If it's not really important to the board or to the community. So it may be worth an opportunity perhaps for staff to look at it and share their thoughts.
Okay. And fundamentally, I think this would be great for all new board members too, to see, to really get them up to speed on what's happening and for board members to track large scale progress and what our goals are and adjust them as we go. So I think this is a great start. I think we could continue to revise it. And let's not let this fall off the back end.
No, it's not.
Hopefully we won't be playing, instead of whack-a-mole, it feels like we're playing whack-a-catastrophe over the last year. We can have some time to actually really triple our efforts and looking forward.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Great presentation. Thank you. Any other questions? All right, thank you, Dr. Gunner. Appreciate it. Item number 5, then. Ready to move on?
Yes.
Okay. Item number 5, consideration possible action to provide commercial paper funding to reimburse expenditures for electric, water, and wastewater capital improvement projects for the period of October 2021 through December 2021. Mike.
Yes, sir. So the board. BPUB staff has reviewed the current requirements for the electric, water, and wastewater projects through December 31st, 2021, and is requesting approval to provide commercial paper funding to reimburse expenditures for the line and the attachments. So specifically, we're seeking reimbursement under electric for $982,250. This is to recover costs for some SCADA communication equipment, some of it for the electric construction contract that we have in the annex furniture, fixtures, and equipment. Underwater, we're seeking reimbursement from CPE for new connections and utility improvements in $483,340. Wastewater, we're seeking reimbursement of $77,395, representing new connections and some lease station rehab for a total of $1,542,985. So at this time, BPUB staff recommends approval of commercial paper funding for the electric, water, and wastewater capital improvement projects for the period of October 2021 through December 2021 for the quarterly funding total of $1,542,985 and an overall total of $25,159,174.
Thank you, Mike. Questions from the board?
I make a motion that we move forward as recommended by administration.
Okay. I have a motion from Mr. Rendon.
Second.
A second from Mr. Sampaio. Any further discussion? None heard. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None heard. Thank you, Mike. Item number 5 passes.
And so thank you.
Item number 6, consideration possible action on a budget policy. Not a lot of detail.
Yeah. Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So the BPUB prepares the fiscal year O&M and capital budgets based on Governmental Accounting Standards Board guidelines and flow of funds and approved bond covenants. The budget policy formalizes the budget process. We did not have a formal budget policy, per se, and so staff went ahead and developed one. That's a three-page document that's attached. The policy statement pretty much reads that it complies with bond covenants. The GASB statements, the state and federal regulatory requirements, and establishes a balanced budget. Under the procedures, the BPUB has adopted processes in its budget, which include and are not limited to budget compliance and budget format, budget goals and objectives, and so on. We've attached the budget procedure in here. It does have it was just approved at the executive level here in November. With an effective date of December the 1st, but we did have procedure documents in the past. They were just not in the right format, and so we went ahead and formalized that in the right format, and went ahead and created the policy for board approval. So at this time, BPP staff recommends approval of the budget policy.
And this policy is in line with what we've been doing.
That's correct. In so the proper format,
it's just the proper format. So we had some of these documents, but not the...
We had the procedures, but not actually adopted the actual policy itself. We did have a budget policy statement that and procedures that get outlined in the actual budget document that we prepare every year. We just had formally prepared policy statement. So that's what we're doing now.
Any other questions? I will entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
A person, Mr. Sampaio.
Second the motion.
Second from Mr. Rendon. Thank you. Any further discussion? None heard. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None heard. Item number 6 passes. Thank you, man. Moving on to item number 7. Presentation by Wilden Financial Services on the water and wastewater rate study. Mike.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So back on August the 10th, 2020, Wilden Financial Services presented an overview of the cost of service study and rate plan alternatives to the BPP Board of Directors. At the time, the board did ask for some additional time. There was a lot of information to absorb, and recommended or expressed the need for a workshop or another board meeting. So we're here tonight to make another presentation. So at the direction of the board and through a contract amendment, Wilden Financial Services was tasked with working on options like a project. So at this time, I'll turn over to Mr. Dan Jackson. He'll be presenting the study. Mr. Jackson.
Thank you, members of the board. This is Dan Jackson, Vice President of Wildan Financial Services. I appreciate the chance to talk to you all again tonight. As you all are aware, my firm has been working with the board and the staff over the last year to develop a long-term water and wastewater rate plan for you to consider. We've run a lot of different scenarios at the request of both staff and the board. We've looked at different alternatives, such as, different levels of debt that you would assume to issue, growth assumptions, expense increases, RESACA costs. All of those different scenarios have been evaluated over the course of the last year. We've given you a couple of different presentations on different impacts of rate plans. Now, as I've said during these presentations, and I believe this very importantly, and that is that many factors go into the determination of the most appropriate rate plan. After all, a rate plan is not just a financial decision. It's a community and a social decision as well. Different rate plans that you implement are going to impact ratepayers differently based on what their individual water and wastewater usage is. So the role of a board and the role of the staff is to determine what is the most fair, just, and reasonable long-term rate plan. Tonight, I'm just going to limit my presentation to focusing on the impact of funding your RESACA alternatives and how that will impact your particular long-term rate plan. I'm going to share my screen, and hopefully I'll have a little bit of success in doing this. Can you all see my screen now?
Yes.
Well, that's always good. Okay, so let's talk, once again, let's talk about the different scenarios that we're going to go over tonight.
We just lost your screen there.
You lost my screen, okay. How is it back now?
Yeah, we see you only. We see the presenters and the attendees.
attendees.
Okay, let me try again. It disconnected my sharing. I'm not really sure why it did that, but let's try one more time. Okay, how's that?
Back, you're good.
All right. Okay. The first, I'm going to go through four different rate scenarios with you all. And once again, policy decisions are going to be the key as to what you consider to be the most fair, just, and reasonable rate plan. The first scenario is our recommendations for a five-year water and wastewater rate plan that just takes into account operating cost increases and the need to issue future debt. It does not consider Resaca costs at all. So it's just your basic water and wastewater rate plan. Scenario two takes that basic water and wastewater rate plan and adds the Resaca costs to it. In other words, it assumes that you make the policy decision that you're just going to absorb all your Resaca costs into your basic water and wastewater rates. The third scenario assumes that you recover your Resaca costs with a separate fee. In other words, you have your water and wastewater rates, and then you have a separate fee for recovering all of your Resaca costs. And the fourth scenario assumes that you recover your Resaca costs plus your USAKI program with a separate Resaca fee. And of course, if you decide to fund the USAKA program, then it's going to end up increasing your overall Resaca fee. So with that in mind, I'm going to go through each of the four scenarios. This is the first scenario. The first scenario represents our recommendations for a rate plan to be implemented for the years 2022 through 2026. Now, you've had a lot of impacts over the last couple of years. Your operating costs have continued to go up. You're looking at the need to issue as much as $150 to $175 million of water and wastewater-specific debt. And you've had some fairly significant growth. All of that has been pushing your costs up to the point where right now in your water and wastewater utility, your rate revenues are recovering a little bit less than your total water and wastewater cost of service.
Sorry to interrupt for a second. I'm not sure this will kick you out, but the slide presentation looks a little bigger for us. Right now we see the...
I'm sorry, sir. I couldn't quite hear you.
Can you start the slide presentation right now? You've got all the slides showing. You had clicked earlier about, I think if you click up on start the...
Okay.
Because it's showing the slide where you can click from all of the different slides. I think if you go up to the top left and go resume from current slide, there you go, a little bit.
How's that?
Now you can just, go ahead and page down.
Okay.
That makes it a little bigger for us. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. So, like I said, first scenario is just recovering your basic water and wastewater cost of service. If you do that, we're going to recommend that you implement a five-year rate plan for the period 2022 through 2026. We would recommend 8% water rate increases in 2022 and 2023, a 6% water rate increase in 2024, a 4% increase in 2025, and a 5% increase in 2026. On the wastewater side, we would recommend 9% wastewater rate adjustments for 2022 through 2024, with a 4% increase in 2025 and a 5% increase in 2026. Now, what does this mean in terms of what people would pay? Well, your average user who uses 10,000 gallons of water and wastewater service a month right now pays about $69 a month for that service. Under this plan, that person's bill would increase by about $6 a month in 2022, from $69 to $74.96. It would increase by about another $6 to $7 in 2023. It would increase by about another $6 in 2024, and then lesser increases of $3 to $4 a month in 2025 and 2026. This plan will enable your water and wastewater costs to recover all of the costs of service, and it will enable you to begin issuing debt to fund your $150 to $200 million long-term capital improvement plan. Okay, now let's assume that we do scenario two. In scenario two, you recover all of your water and wastewater costs, but you also absorb the Resaca costs. into your water and wastewater rates. You don't have a separate fee. Your Osaka costs are just recovered through your water and wastewater rates. From this chart here, you can see that it makes no difference on the wastewater side because Osaka is a water-related cost. So your wastewater rate adjustments are the same under either scenario one or scenario two. However, under the water side, if you wanted to recover your Osaka costs through your water rates, you would have to implement nominally higher increases in 2022, 2023, 2024, and 2025. It would basically be 1% more a year in each of those 4 years. And then by 2026, the rate adjustment would be the same. What would the impact be? As you can see, under scenario two, your monthly bill goes from $69.09 to $75.31 instead of $74.96 as it was under scenario one. That's about 40 cents more. And then you can see the adjustments get a little bit larger so that by the time you reach 2026, your difference is about $2 a month more. So that's what your ratepayers would pay, or your average residential customer would pay, if you decided to absorb your Osaka costs just into your water and wastewater rates. Now let's talk about these Osaka costs a little bit more, because that implements, or that that certainly influences scenarios three and four. This chart right here is a forecast of what your Osaka costs actually are. Your Osaka costs are broken down into O&M related, capital related, and then restore grant related. Your O&M costs are about $2.5 million a year. That's what your Osaka O&M costs are. Your capital outlays are about another $800,000 a year. So that's about $3.2 to $3.5 million. However, you are anticipating to get some benefits from your restore grants, about $2 to $2.5 million a year. So that brings your costs down to about $1.2 to $1.3 million a year. That's your Osaka-related costs. Now, if you were to add the USAKI program into it, then your Osaka costs go way up. So as you can see, in the years 2023 and 2024, your USAKI-related costs are about $2.5 to $4.5 million. This next chart right here shows your Osaka-related costs and your USAKI-related costs in the out years, 2026 through 2029. While your O&M costs under scenarios two and three remain at about $1.3 to $1.4 million, the USAKI contribution gets greater and greater in the out years. What's that telling us? That's telling us that if you decide to implement a separate Osaka fee that includes USAKI, the fee is going to have to be higher. So let's say that you decide that you want to have a separate Osaka fee, separate from your water and wastewater rates. That's what scenario three is. Scenario three looks at a separate Osaka fee in two ways. One way is just a fee per thousand gallons. If you were just to implement a Osaka fee that's a fee for every 1,000 gallons of water you sell, we calculate that that fee would be 25 cents per 1,000 gallons. That would recover all of your Osaka-related costs. It would be assessed to every individual ratepayer based on the amount of gallons that they use each month. Now, there's another way to do it, too. The other way to do it is just to implement a monthly fee. If you were to implement a monthly fee for all of your accounts, it would be $2.50 per month. Now, you could also further clarify that monthly fee by having a separate monthly fee for your residential accounts, which is basically your 5/8 by 3/4 inch accounts. I know there are some commercial accounts that are 5/8 inch by 3/4 inch, but the vast majority of them are residential. And then you have a higher fee for your non-residential accounts. If you did it that way, your monthly fee would be $2 for your residential accounts and $8 for your higher for your non-residential accounts. And once again, what's this slide telling us too? This slide tells us that the fee that you implement is going to impact ratepayers differently based on what their water usage is. If you're a very low-volume user and you only use, say, 3,000 to 4,000 gallons a month, you probably want a fee based on per 1,000 gallons. Because if you only use 4,000 gallons a month and the fee is 25 cents, then your Osaka charges are $1. Whereas if you charge a monthly fee for everybody, your fee would be $2.50.
But if you're a high volume user and you use 20 to 25,000 gallons a month, then you probably want the fixed fee for everybody. Because if you use 20,000 gallons a month, then your fee would be $5, as opposed to it being $2.50, which is what it would be under the charge for everybody. So that's why I say that what the type of fee you implement is going to impact different ratepayers differently based on what their individual usage is. So this is scenario three. This is scenario three that assumes that you will cover just your Wasaka-related costs. Now let's take a look at scenario four. Scenario four is that you recover your Wasaka-related costs and your Yusaki costs. If you did that and you have to suddenly recover several million dollars more a year in Yusaka-related costs, then, of course, your fee would have to be significantly higher. If you did just the fee per 1,000 gallons for everybody, it would start out at 45 cents per 1,000 gallons, and it would trend up over the five-year period to $1.30 per 1,000 gallons. If you charge the monthly charge for everybody, it would start out at $4.50 a month, and it would gradually increase up to $12.50 a month. Or you could do it the separate way. You could do one fee for your residential and one fee for your non-residential, which would be $11, which would eventually reach to $11 and then $44. So in my final slide right here, I tried to summarize the four different scenarios. This chart right here just kind of walks you through the impact of the four scenarios. If you were to do either scenario one, three, or four, which basically has the Wasaka costs separate from the your monthly water and sewer charges, you would still need to do a series of annual water and wastewater rate adjustments, 8%, 8, 6, 4, and 5. If you decided to absorb the Wasaka costs into your water and sewer rates, then your fee would have to be a little bit higher, about 1% more each year for the first 4 years. None of the scenarios make a difference on your wastewater rates. Wastewater adjustments are what they are under any of the four scenarios. That's because the Wasaka costs, again, are recovered in your water rates. Your monthly charges are going to differ based on how you implement the charge. Your current customer right now who uses 10,000 gallons a month pays $69 a month for that service. Under scenario one that does not incorporate any Wasaka costs, your $69 charge would go up to $95 by 2026. Under scenario two, if you absorbed Wasaka costs, it would go from $69 to $97. So it would be about a $2 difference over the five-year period. If you implemented scenario three, where you implemented a separate Wasaka fee, that fee would be, for your average ratepayer of 10,000 gallons, would be about $2.50 a month. It would be about the same as scenario two. But if you wanted to recover all of the Wasaka costs in this fee, your fee would go up even more. It would go from $69 a month eventually to about $108 a month by 2026. It would be implemented over a five-year period, but the adjustments would be slightly higher. This is, again, a brief overview and summary of the options that you have available. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have at this time.
Questions?
I think from a management,
it's like the big time we've got to present.
Yeah, and that's kind of why we
no more excuses.
I mean, we're at really a point where I've got to get this to the city commission or scuttle ship here and not do great increases.
I'll remind the board, this is the third or fourth time.
I don't like bringing this continually back to the board, but there's going to come a point where the next year's presentation is going to be significantly higher than this year's. So we need some direction from the board. If you're going to do this, we'll take it to the commission. They may scuttle it for us. But we need some kind of direction to move this along, because I've been at it 2 years, and you're going to look at me and say, why did you wait 2 years to get this implemented? And we're not.
John.
Tell me again, what's the difference between the Wasaka and the Wasaka fee? What is it? Tell no Wasaka or Wasaka?
paying some of the cost for dredging and things like that. There's different options.
Maintained in the Southwest?
Yes.
John, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that was my question, is that what is the fee, and it goes to everybody?
Well, you've got different options. You can do it everybody, or you can do it by charge, by size of water meter.
Yeah, it does go to everybody.
Right?
The benefits of the Resakas are
to everybody.
Well, I mean, some benefit more than others, and that could be another point that we want to bring up. But
did it just to Resaka users, the fee would be much higher.
Much higher
to those customers.
Now this doesn't incorporate the discussion of charging for example, such as myself, someone who lives on Lakeway and draws water from a Resaka for irrigation purposes. That's a separate discussion. Right? This is water we're supplying to fee we're
yeah,
talking
we're
about.
Not.
That's yet another discussion. So we can address that as far as people that use Resakas for irrigation purposes. Right now, we're the only water supply entity in the valley that does not charge those users.
Right.
A single red cent. Every single other entity does. But that's a separate issue. So the issue of, well, you live on a Resaka and you're the one that benefits the most from that. The primary benefit of this is twofold: flooding protection and water supply storage. And that benefits everybody. That's why that's become part of our water system. Now, Dan, I'm sorry, is it Dan?
Yeah.
Dan, you kept saying Resaka and U.S. Army Corps is Resaki, and I think the public may have been hearing Resaki or Resaki a lot. So I want to make sure that everybody understands that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, UCACE, is the project we have going with them. Additional matching components. Okay. So in other words, that extra money we're talking about would grow a substantial amount of money. Now, we don't cover that. Let's say go with three. And it's just the Resaka fee. I'm just saying that right now. Where else could we get?
Match.
And are we saying goodbye to the?
Goodbye to the U.S.
You'd have to get a match. State funds, source of funding. Couldn't do federal funds.
Right.
Because of poor, once you do one, you can't do one.
Okay, but does it have to come? Our rate fee structure.
Term.
That's the only way we can generate funds.
The total local share. Would be $4 million.
$16 million. Right. But how much? Right.
I don't think we have. We don't have a recommendation
We would include the grant out there. Dan, can I get you to see that?
I'm sorry. Do you want me to mute?
Yeah, just while you're not. Solves the echo problem. Thank you.
Right, so here again, the scenario three, which includes the Resaka fee, that's for the restore project. total grant there was $42 million, of which our contribution would be only $5,353,000, and the majority of that is federal funded. So that's a 9-year project over 4 different phases. And so if we were to approve, we would easily fund that difference or find the funding for that local match for the Resaka. So it would be good to keep that restore program. Now, the United States Army Corps of Engineer project, that's a totally different issue because it does require a lot more local funding part, which
I think the base water and wastewater rate increases. Forget the Resacas. That stuff we got to have. I mean, you forget the Resacas, but the water and wastewater, you can't neglect those for 5 years. Forget the Resacas. It's just the normal O&M and operation capital for water and sewer. That has to be done. You know, and that got another couple components on here with the different Restore Act and the core, but we don't want to lose sight of the fact that water and wastewater rate increases for our system operation, we need these rate increases sooner or later. I mean, if it can be later and higher, or sooner and lower. And in the past, the commission has always said we want a series of smaller increases, not big increases. So, I mean, we're kind of at the point where we got to get something to them. Or it's not going to be pretty.
And John, you mentioned that this has been on the table for the last couple of years and it hasn't moved forward. And it came about because?
It came about because we hadn't had rate increases in quite a while. First thing, for standard water and sewer. And then it came about because we got these opportunities for core funding and state funding. It's a matching share that we don't have funds to pay that. So
I mean, there's two reasons. Number one is that we haven't touched water rates in how many years? Five.
Water rates. The last increase was in 2016. Wastewater was 2014.
So combination of 5 to 7 years, we haven't touched the rates at all. So we're way behind there.
And some of this funding will go back into Resaca. Maintenance or restoration?
That's the second part.
That's the second part.
I was reading this material, and I'm trying to understand it, and it's the first time.
Forget the Resaca. Just the base rates haven't been raised in 5 to 7 years.
Do we have two-headed beast here? We got the number one is the rate increases that we haven't touched in a while. We've been kicking the can down the road on that, and this past year was the pandemic or a year and a half, and so that was another reason why we delayed. So I think John's saying, and I agree with him, that we can't delay on that issue. The second issue, and it's not the Resaca issue, it pertains to the longer sustainability of our water structure and system. Because we use the water, we use the Resacas for emergency storage, we use the Resacas for pass-through, we use them for flood protection, et cetera. So if we don't move on that, the longer we wait for that, the longer we have issues with our long-term sustainability of the entire water system. Wow. And I'm not talking about all the other benefits that come from that. So environmental benefits, ecological benefits, et cetera. That's all. I mean, we don't even need to discuss that right now because that may not be our charge. I want to keep this focused to the charge of the utility board because it relates to water and wastewater.
Well, this is a presentation item. I mean, I think we should narrow it down and then move forward on making a decision or recommendation.
Right. At least get it to where take this option to the commission or the options to the commission. Because we're not going to approve what the commission is.
I would suggest, this is me personally, at the bare minimum, I would like to see a base Resaca fee included. That's just me. At least item, option three. Because we don't do that, we lose the millions of dollars we've invested. Mike, you can tell me a round number in operational costs or that's all we recommend, and we don't recommend either a 4 or a 5. And I know that everybody's looking at options. You know, the higher 5 years. I don't think that. I would like to see that included as an option, saying this is if we want to do stuff and we want to enhance our system, it's going to cost money. We can't afford to continue, and this. That additional money comes only because we went out at the direction of everybody to go get additional money and funding options for the Resaca system, which is what we did by bringing in the pool. But there is a substantial 35% match that is going to be a part of this that the public needs to bear. if we go that option. So personally, to me, I would like to take option one and two off the table if anybody said to the, but that's just my thought. It's not a
question on the Rosaca, on the Rosaca fee. And I agree. I think the Rosaca fee, for, if for nothing else, for the sake of transparency, I think it's better to separate out that Rosaca fee so that the community knows what they're paying for this project, right? Are we limited to this option where it's either fixed or based on water consumption, or is there, you know, one of the things that Jude said, for example, was, hey, this isn't only about your water, it's also about flooding, right? And that's a benefit to everybody. To a certain degree, this is more of a, flooding is not a PUB issue, right? I mean, or it's not something that falls under our responsibility. Now, perhaps we're the ones who collect this tax or this revenue, but ultimately that's a city responsibility, I believe. Is there also a possibility, whether we want to consider it or not, is another question, but can you also do it as an ad valorem or based on property value so that it's not just a flat fee across the table, but just like the city collects its revenue, its tax revenue based on property values, that specific fee would be collected based on property values? Or is that not something that that's even on the table?
We hadn't looked at that.
Okay. Are you proposing then that the city, I mean, in our proposal to the city?
No, I mean, we can collect it.
Right? But yeah, but why? It's not us, right? I like the idea of,
well,
if we're going to mention it to the city.
I'm not sure that they can.
Yeah, well,
I'm not sure that they can. Right. But
yeah, I think that's a great idea.
If it's a city, if it's ultimately a city responsibility, and we're being tasked with collecting it, then okay.
Well, there's a portion of that that we do have. Right, in the water supply and storage side. And I like that train of thought, and that there's a portion that we're not responsible for, which is flooding, and to say that it's part of that bill, I think that is transparency-wise, that is, we would justifiably get some pushback.
Well, and I think as well with, you know, with the Army Corps project, so as I understand it, some of the Rosacas are directly used by PUB for water storage and for to feed our water treatment plants. But not all of the Rosacas that are included in that project do benefit our water customers. And so there's a question of, you know, do you want to charge our water customers for something that really perhaps it falls more in the category of a city responsibility. Again, whether we can be the ones to collect it, like we collect other fees, but I think it's good to be transparent, right? Because you don't want to be charging your water customers for something that isn't directly benefiting them as water customers. It's benefiting them as residents of Brownsville, but it's not really part of the water production costs. So I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know if it flies, but perhaps worth discussion.
I don't understand what you're saying. That the city owns them, some Rosacas, and PUB owns others.
No, what I'm saying is that PUB's responsibility is to provide water to its customers. It's not to provide stormwater management and to provide flooding. Flood management. That's a city responsibility. And if part of this project is to benefit the community in terms of flooding, I'm not sure charging the water customers for their water consumption is the right way to go about paying for that investment. I don't know. That's just, again, just a personal thing.
No, I think you're right. I think you're spot on. discuss, and that's why I would like to present those options with the consideration that it may not necessarily fall directly to us. And more, when I mean us, I mean the rate paying.
We will be, and I think it's somewhere, not in these slides, but in the slides, the presentation they've provided before, we're far and above the most expensive water and wastewater provider in the valley. I mean, we compare relatively well with the state of Texas, but if you look at San Benito and you look at Harlingen and you look at Far and you look at the other valley utilities, right now, as it stands, we're more expensive.
Right.
We're going to be three times more expensive if we start putting in all these fees and rates.
Well, I think the biggest outlier was McAllen. I think some like Harlingen was close.
But
they're going to have to increase their rates as well. I mean that's the thing. Either they don't or they start paying into or losing.
Yeah, and they don't, you know, the big thing is they don't have Rackage desal plants. They don't have Versacas. We do. And the board chose to diversify its water supply to be drought-proof.
Yeah. That was a wise decision, and it's more expensive for a reason. I'll go on record right now. If McAllen doesn't do something, they're going to be in dire straits for 15 years.
They lapse.
Absolute dire straits when the Rio starts to dry up. Yeah. And that's going to happen. And we're going to be in big problems. A combination of a gap to get us to additional desal plant, this is more
right. And if it ends up being more expensive, it ends up being more expensive. What I'm just saying is that if there are certain things that we're lumping in there that aren't directly related to providing our ratepayers with water, then I think we owe it to the community to be very transparent about that. If it's more along the lines of a city service, then perhaps we should look at it as a property tax. Call it whatever you want, right? But ultimately, that may be what we're doing.
As long as we can collect it, hopefully, because we are up against the wall here with the Corps and the other agencies that we'll miss the window on these funding.
Mike, explain again what we have covered as far as the restore project and then the additional USACE project. Is that, I mean, what is covered under, by which? I'm confused.
The Restore Act, I guess, covers the township, Resaca.
Town Resaca.
Town Resaca.
Town Resaca.
Okay.
And that core, then it's the Resaca de la Guerra and Resaca del Rancho.
Right, in Rancho. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it's absolutely critical that at a bare minimum we pass a small fee to get Town Resaca finished, because we right now we're not getting the benefits of the because we have portions of that Resaca not finished, and we have a little bit more storage capacity, but the overall enhancement of the flood protection capacity that fell to us because we were the only ones that would do it, and that was a decision we made 10 years ago, and we're, you know, what, two-thirds of the way, three-quarters of the way, and we get, you know, a much more significant, we would be foregoing, I'm just throwing something out there, 10 times the benefits if we don't finish that project, at least Town Resaca. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, we all said it was going to come with a price tag to get additional money, and until we find, golden hen, the hen that lays the golden egg, it requires no match, going to have to make tough decisions.
You know, if we lose the core funding, that's it for the core, because we can't go back. It'll be what we're currently doing now. We're limping along at a couple million dollars a year for Resacas forever. I mean, that's what we'll have left. There won't be another heyday funding for the Resacas, at least from a federal standpoint.
Yeah.
And it'll be what we're doing right now on a small scale with our two dredgers. You know, a couple million dollars a year we'll spend. That's it. Yeah. So we without the knowledge of what the, and Mayor's on the call, but without the knowledge of what the commission wants to do with Resacas, we won't know until we take it down there. We're going to, one thing to talk about tomorrow night is this very presentation with the council.
Well, maybe that's the place to start too.
High level, but. You know, not in this detail, but to tell us that's coming.
And I think a clear breakdown of the benefits associated with the project, an honest, clear breakdown of exactly what Patricia said about if there are aspects, the benefits that are associated with flood protection. With exception, I'll say, a town of Saco, which is already bought in by the previous board. Yeah. We back out of that now. We're 80% of the way. I think it'll be a loss. But the other Resacas, I think you're actually.
But Town Resaca does directly benefit our water supply as well, does it not?
Yeah, there are enhancements there, but the main direction there is the main benefit.
Right.
And I'm just saying very qualitative.
But at some point, it stops being about water. I mean, realistically, it stops being about water supply, and it's more about the other benefits of having.
Yeah, Resaca de la Palma, Guerra, is the big one for us as far as water benefit. That's the one we use the plants, and that's the longer system. The central part of that, you're right, there's downstream part of it and upstream part of it that may not be.
But people draw out of all these Resacas for water,
right?
That's water supply.
Yeah.
Water supply for irrigation, but they're all benefiting out of those.
Right, but you shouldn't tax all of the
but community. That's why I want to isolate it, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have to be very careful with that. We don't want to. That's why people are going to think that it has to be handled as a subject.
It's a different deal.
And I can't tell you that for supply corporations around the valley, if it just they say, wait a minute, they can't believe it. I have to say it three times.
Right.
That we have hundreds, thousands of drawers from that. And I'm one of them. I've tried to pay, and I can't pay because there's not a fund to pay into it. And you can't even, you know, you have to donate, and you don't know where that money goes. And we're talking a $5 fee or $10 fee a month for a flat rate. That's a separate issue. Well, that's not part of the discussion here. I don't want to delay it anymore because we have the critical. You know, rate increase, and then whether or not we want to, we could. I mean, I don't want to, but we could. I mean, if we want to go a different, yet another, I'm sure Dan is scratching his head and have one great option 17 down the road. But I would like to, you know, have that. I think meet with the commission. We've been on this item quite a bit, and we have quite a bit more to go. Meet with the commission, discuss the options that include some semblance of the Resaca. At the very least, Town Resaca and those components of Resaca, like Guerra de la Palma, that are critical to direct water supply and transfer of water to drinking water plants. Yeah. Yeah, no, we need to make a decision.
Right. I mean, we're
similar.
I'm open to suggestions.
Well, we would once the board.
They need to know what to present. Yeah.
We can present all the options, but board usually says we're recommending this option. That's all you can do. You can't approve it. You recommend it.
Jude, what was your recommendation?
I would like to see if we could openly discuss and say recommend, not saying that we wholeheartedly endorse these options, but we want to enter into a detailed dialogue with the commission about items, options. What are there, 3, 4, and 5, Dan? Is there a 5 in there? Or am I adding?
No, in this presentation, there's only 4.
Okay, 3 and 4. Yeah,
3 and 4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, can you put those 4 options up again on the screen?
Those are
actually
screen 2 and 3.
Can you share your screen, please, again? And,
okay, let me, I'm trying now.
Thank you.
2 is just lumping everything into the rate so that there's no differentiation. People
this is
paying higher rates. And
can you see page the page of the presentation now?
Yes.
This is a summary of the four scenarios. Again, water and wastewater rate adjustments for your are required under any scenario. The wastewater rate adjustments are the same under any of the 4 scenarios. So it's really only the water rates that are affected by Resaca funding.
Can you put up just a summary of the 4? I think it was one of your first slides that lists the options so we can look at some.
Sure.
Without the percent. There you go.
Okay.
So there you go. So.
So scenario one just excludes all Resaca costs and just looks at the core water and wastewater rate increases. Scenario two says we're going to pay all the Resaca costs, but we're going to absorb that into the basic water and wastewater rate. So you just pay a water and wastewater rate. It pays for Resaca as well as your other water and wastewater operating costs. Scenario three is separating out the Resaca costs from the water and wastewater rate. So you pay a separate Resaca fee. And that separate Resaca fee can be either a charge per 1,000 gallons of 25 cents or a monthly fee of $2.50, whichever you would prefer. And then scenario four recovers the Resaca costs in a separate fee, but it includes the core costs.
Well, yeah, you're saying recovers the Resaca costs, but I want to make sure that everybody understands that presents our matching to the U.S. Army Corps, but it's Army grant, the budget, right?
That is correct.
Item four, that's scenario four.
Yes, scenario four. Mm-hmm.
It's both the restore and the core.
Restore and the core.
Both restore and core under scenario four.
Three is just restore.
Yeah, and the reason, Mark, I have three and four in my mind is four, if we don't present four to the city, we potentially lose a lot of money. Okay, and I think that should be their decision in concert with us as to whether or not we do that. And if we item three, separating out the Resaca fee, as Patricia just said, and I was also saying, if we get done with town Resaca, and we want to eliminate the fee and stop the fee, because look, we did something, and now we're going to take a break. We can do that in the future. We can stop recovering a fee because we're not going to, or we supplant that with user fee that says now users need to be paying a little more, or as Patrice said, hey, now this is for primarily benefit. This area is primarily benefit for flooding, so the city should get involved. We can say, all right, we're done. Now you want to continue it? You step in. If we scenario one to me is off the books because we lose too much. Scenario two I don't like because everybody pays and it becomes involved and we're never going to be able to recover that if we decide to stop it. But I would recommend we present to the city options three and four and watch them cringe.
Yeah, I agree. The question is how you calculate that fee. Right, so that it's fair. My concern is, and going back to drawing water from the Resaca, if you do it based on consumption, the people that don't draw from the Resaca are subsidizing the ones that do, right? Because you don't draw from the Resaca, you draw water from PUB to water your lawn.
Yes.
And so you're paying more than those that live on the Resaca and get to draw from the Resaca to water their lawn.
It's a free rider.
It's a free rider. And so that my concern is how you calculate that fee. And then if you just do a basic, hey, everybody pays the same, is that fair if it's water-related versus flood-related? And that's why I ask if there's a way to do it based on property value. I don't know.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot there.
We can't, but the city would have to, I would think.
And yeah, so what, you know, I would again say scenario three, scenario four, with a lot of details to be fleshed out, and at the very minimum, explain to them the urgency that we need to at least do the rate hike part that's not involved with Resacas while we discuss this other scenario.
Start that dialogue.
Yeah. When it comes to the rate hike, or Resaca aside, when it comes to the rate hike amount. Is there a very simple and straightforward, just this is what it's costing us to operate, and this is why we need to hike it by 8 or 9%?
I don't know if Dan would have that, Mike, or not.
Well,
that's a lot of detail to get to that. But
I know, but
yeah, on M side, he covered it. We're at about $2.5 million each year. But the other portion increase here that we that's not on the slides was the $150 million to $200 million CIP program.
Right.
Over the next 5 years.
But I think it's going to be important when you present it to the city commission to say this is what this is funding.
We wouldn't just present this. It'd be the detailed study that we didn't put tonight because you've seen it four times already.
Yeah.
That would definitely go to the commission first. And then it would show the options. Yeah, we'd have to give that back.
Is that hike that 8%, 8%, and then what is it?
8.8645.
Is that the only, is that the best we've been able to come up with, or is there a way to just say, hey, we're going to do, you know, 6% over the next 5 years, or is there, I mean, I just think dropping 8%, you may raise
a couple. You could start out smaller and go higher, but, I mean, you got to get to that same total somehow.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have it all on the back end or start it in the front and have it drop down at the end.
Well, no. Or just flat across, right? You could also just say X amount the entire way through over the next 5 years.
I'd have to look at what we'd have to fund, Mike, right? I think it's based on funding requirements that when we need those rate increases.
Right.
That's why they're broke up in different stages.
Right.
I mean, we'd have to look at that. Yeah. But
but I'm assuming you could use debt to fund it temporarily. I'm guessing
but then when we take a long term, I mean, we at that point have to pay principal and interest on the debt, and we need those rates there to be able to pay that debt service.
I'm just, my gut tells me it's going to be easier to present one number, one percentage, and say we need to raise rates by X percent over the next 5 years versus, say, 8.8, 6.4, and then 5. I could be
wrong. We can check with Dan on that, Mike.
See if we can work on flat fee that works and allows us some flexibility. So I think you're right.
Just a straightforward message.
It's scary.
All right, are we good? We need to move forward on this, folks. As Chair, I need to keep us moving. We've got a lot of people waiting, and then we're already at 7:30 here. Are folks okay with recommending options? Not recommending, but saying entering a discussion tomorrow with item paragraphs 3 and 4.
Yes.
We're not endorsing them. We're not saying that's what we're going to have to go with, but we want to enter a discussion and it basically eliminating. Scenarios 1 and 2 from the table or not?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah, we're okay with it.
Art?
Yeah.
Good? Okay. It says here the board will determine possible action to take. Do we just do that or do you need that more formalized?
Probably need to take action. I recommend that.
And
motion, and that way we've got something.
But that is a motion since I'm the chair. At least for another hour or two.
I have no idea how you put that into motion.
I'll just go ahead and make the motion in the absence of others. I'll say that the Brownsville Public Utility Board has determined that we will work with the. With the City Commission over the coming months to look at requesting consideration of Scenario 3 or Scenario 4 for water rate increases.
So moved.
I have a first from Mr. Sampaio and a second from, yeah, let's give it to Ms. O'Quinn. All right.
Thank you.
All right, second to Ms. O'Quinn. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay.
All right.
Good honor to have.
We're good. Excellent. On item 7. We're moving on to item 8.
Presentation, discussion.
There's an echo. So everybody could mute unless you're speaking, please. Thank you.
Dan, could you take yours up?
We're going to blame you, Danny, and it's you. Item 8, presentation, discussion, and possible action. To select an engineering firm to provide professional engineering services relating to a standby backup power specifications and design for various Brownsville Public Utilities Board water and wastewater facilities. For the record, I'll be abstaining on items 8 and the following item number 9. And I'm stepping off a little bit, so I'm sorry to take over for this item. Is that okay? Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Cesar Cortinas. I'm the director of electric transmission and distribution for the Brownsville Public Utilities Board. An assessment following Winter Storm Uri and the result of resolution prompt an engineering and logistic review of the equipment, material, chemical supplies, and standby backup power system for each critical BPUV operation facility. The initial engineering portion of the review identified 3 water treatment and 2 water wastewater treatment facilities that require upgrades to the existing backup power system to meet current reliability and resiliency requirements. An engineering firm with standby backup power design experience is needed to ensure each facility is designed to meet or exceed the required levels of power system reliability and resiliency. In response to this need, the Brazos PUB Purchasing Department advertised a request for statement of qualifications for engineering services for the standby backup power specifications and design for various BPUB water and wastewater facilities in the Brazos Herald on August 29 and September 5, 2021. They also posted the advertisement on BPU website and email to 12 vendors. On September 23, 2021, the BPUV Purchasing Department acknowledged receipt of 5 statements of qualification. Mr. Eli Alvarez, he's the area manager for the TND, will be running through the exercise and interviewing the top 3 engineering firms.
Thank you, Ms. Fortinas. We have tonight, in order of presentation, Reason Nichols, followed by Half Associates and KWH Engineering. So for these presentations, we'll have the presentation or the firm that's presenting will be in the boardroom while the other two will be waiting outside. And first is Friesen Nichols. Presenting tonight is Juan Bojanos, Jeff Hensley, and joining virtually is Jason Cochran. So, Ms. Celia will have a 5-minute timer. Each firm will have 5 minutes to present, and with an additional 5 minutes for question and answers. So, without further ado, we're going to pass it on to Reason Nichols.
Good evening. Madam Vice Chair, members of the board, Juan Bivanos with Friesen Nichols. I'm actually one of your water and wastewater engineering retirees that Mr. Brzezak was speaking about earlier. So it's good to see you all and staff again. We'll be presenting on. So our presentation team will be myself, Jen Hesley, which is an electrical engineering technical lead, and Jason Coughlin, who is our process engineering lead. The proposed org chart is all these staff that we propose to use to be available for this project, and Mr. Jeff Hensley will be going with project approach notes.
Thank you. Appreciate y'all giving us the opportunity to present. As far as our goal for this project, the goal is to improve the reliability and resiliency of the electrical system platform backup generation at the 3 water treatment plants, 2 wastewater treatment plants listed on slide. The project approach is broken up into 5 different phases. First, we start with the report study phase. That's where we make site visits to the plant, meet with plant personnel, talk about the project, look at what the requirements are as far as new loads, existing loads, and make sure we account for any improvements to the plants that may be taking place when it comes to the generators. So the report study phase continuing on. We would meet with generator suppliers and make selections for the project. One of the big things is, how does this project incorporate the recently passed Senate Bill 3? It talks about emergency generators and stuff like that. So that'd be an important aspect of the project, which we can discuss during the study phase. And also cost, going to the cost estimate. As you're aware, the cost of projects, the bidding is really going up right now. So that's a big key component. And we move into the design phase. Of course, we'd have the standard, typical 60, 90%, 100% submittals. But one of the things we like to do during the design phase is proper plan operations, look at the construction sequencing. We also like to talk to electrical contractors to get their thoughts on, hey, this is what we're planning on doing. Does it make sense from a construction sequencing standpoint? Because that's a critical component to keep the plants up and running while these improvements take place. And then move into the big phase, work with VPUB on different alternative methods for procurement and bidding, such as purchasing the equipment, which has a long lead time, to help expedite the construction schedule. We'd also look at maybe what we call a competitive steel proposal, which is more of a value-based selection process when it comes to contractors and suppliers. And we move into the construction phase, where we review shop drawings, work hand-in-hand with the contractor, looking at their quality of work, inspecting the work, and then start with the commissioner. They'd be out there on site next to the contractor and VPUB personnel with the start and commissioning. Through all of these, the different stages, starting a report study phase, all the way through start and commissioning, even beyond start and commissioning, communications is very important. And so getting the plan operations input is also important, cost, and like I talked about before, construction sequencing. Appreciate the unit experience. Over the past 10 years, they've been done 45 generator projects. We've got a local design team, a deep bench. We've got 30-plus design professionals. And as you can see, this is a list of our projects that we've done over the last 5 years. Generator experience. Why choose free submissions? Project manager Juan Bolanos is very familiar with VPUB. Retired here about a year and a half ago, spent 5 years. Knows a lot about the plants. We've got extensive experience in the design of backup generators. And Freese & Nichols is a full-service engineering firm when it comes to design and construction management. For a one-stop shop, we can do it all, geotechnical, structural, any of that stuff. Thank you for this opportunity, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
I noticed y'all have a local address. You have local representation here?
Yes, that's correct. That is our address.
How many employees do you have locally?
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Elsa. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Chair, our next firm presenting is Happ & Associates. Joining us tonight is Jose Delgado, John Clint, and Gabriel Benavides. Thank you.
Let's see.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is John Clint. I want to thank you all. Rachel's manager for Half Associates and Brown for the families and the office right here. Tonight it's Jose Lavallo, the practice lead for MET and ITS in the town office, and Gabriel Benavides, the elected lead in the next 5 minutes. Go through a couple of bullet points to express on how we believe we are best suited for this project. It'd be basically an extension of your staff this project. Jose has supported with 60 local staff members and located in Brownsville, McAllen, and over 1,100 staff members around the state of Texas and the southern southeast United States. Both Jose and Gabriel have numerous projects similar to this in the Rio Grande Valley, and we have several engineers that completed many of these state attention as well. This firm, like I said earlier, we have 1,100 people staying with company wide. We are have all the tools in the infrastructure toolbox that you may need on this project, specifically electrical engineering. Our engineers also have extensive local knowledge. Like I said, they've been built with a couple of clients that we have worked with here locally on similar type projects. A couple of bullet points, 1,100 employees, 27 locations, and we've been serving the Valley for over 28 years out of McGowan being recently in the Brownsville office. We opened just before COVID hit. And there are, I think correct, it's going to be 10 people in a matter of 2 years. And the operations manager for Brownsville and the client liaison in this project, Jose and I will be talking on a regular basis to make sure this project moves forward and that you all are satisfied with our work.
Thank you, John. Again, thank you so much. Jose Delgado, Pat Associates. For 12 years now, I graduated from Pan American. And at the beginning of my career, I went to Dallas in Austin, Texas, where I learned the foundations of electrical engineering for these type of projects. Again, I have more than 20 years of experience in electrical engineering and the sector of water, wastewater, and sewage, specifically for backup generators. One of the things that, actually, as a matter of fact, this year, that is very, very relevant, I participated in a statewide panel presentation after the winter storm Uri, which was to focus on how to establish greater reliability and resiliency to normal and backup power systems on water treatment plants. Also, I conducted, I was actually one of the selected engineers, I have associates that have conducted a risk assessment on for power resiliency, but also cybersecurity. That's another aspect that we also look into as we try to push for other elements that pose a risk. In water treatment plants that is very related to the power plants. And such was for plants in Texas and California. John, you spoke about yourself, and again, we have Gabriel Benavides. He is also another native from UTRTPS in Silva, John. He is the electrical team leader, has over 14 years of experience in these type of projects. A lot of experience with water and wastewater. He's working on multiple projects across the valley, these type of projects, and also in the state of Florida. Here is the project team. Terms of point charge, the trade. Then we have electricals, so we have both Ray and Adrian, Scanning Adrian, Jimmy, and also Mark Engineering, Miguel, and all of them from the RGB. These are just some examples of the projects that we have. Just for closing, again, we have four electrical PEs within 30 minutes of the site, an army of electrical engineers, another
trades, again, only within 30 minutes. We have become a lot of relevance, and while we strive to stay in front of the leading edge of potential projects, that folks at our risk for the water treatment plant facility. Very passionate about this. Again, we're local, and we have the experience. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Questions?
No.
Questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, the last firm that we'll be presenting tonight for this board item is KWH Engineering, and joining us tonight is Sophia Feng and Jim O'Connor. Pass it over to you.
Good evening. This is Sophia Feng, Principal Principal Engineer at KWH Engineering. It's such a great honor for us to be here to give you a presentation for these projects. At first, I would like to give production on our team. Our team is made of three firms. KWH Engineering will serve as prime engineer in these projects. I will be principal engineer in charge. And our senior electrical engineer, Jim O'Connor, will lead the electrical design and the study. He will be the project manager for these projects. We have two consultant team with us. Team one, integration will provide INC design for these projects, and the Vakivia, they will provide us a structural design for these projects. Our team has a long history of working together, especially in water and wastewater treatment plants. We have senior level engineers will be fully hands-on throughout these projects. We are committed to provide, to listen to your concern and providing innovative and reliable solutions. Next, I'll hand over to Jim O'Connor.
KWH staff has over 40 years of experience in the installation and application of standby and backup generators. Industries that we support include water, wastewater, military, and some others listed there. One example project is the city of Baton Rouge, where we had to install over 300 backup generators on wastewater treatment plants and lift stations, size ranging from 10 to 2,000 kW. We monitored SCADA services at each of these locations, required extensive remodeling and some relatively simple. The treatment plants, we were required to parallel generators, which was a recently case with all the smart generators we have. Your five facilities, your two wastewater plants and your three water treatment plants, you guys know those. I'd like to ask you some questions about those. And treatment and delivery concerns for each facility as it relates to maybe limited power. Maybe you don't want to limit the power. Each facility's electrical systems, preferred equipment, distributed generation. I don't know if you guys have considered that with the electric utilities. Possible fuel types, generator maintenance, how a generator is going to be maintained, and emergency response with those generators. Preliminary engineering report. We'd like to focus on visiting the facility and doing an equipment assessment and means for implementing an automatic transfer switch. view the SCADA system and find out how we can interface that so that the generators can be monitored. Review possible generator configurations relative to essential process equipment and electric utility service points. Single generators distributed in the process areas or parallel generators with switchgear, there's some options there. Develop preliminary engineering report, drawings, and proposed application standard, and submit to the board for review. Meet with the board, discuss the comments, incorporate the results, and the final report will create the roadmap for the 60, 90, and 100% design gap. The electrical system study and arc flash analysis will require that we gather a lot of information. This information will include conductor sizes, lengths, types, circuit breaker sizes, manufactured models, any applicable settings, fuses, fuse sizes and models. Document all motor loads and associated motor starter types. Document electrical system architecture and any alternative electrical system configurations. Understand the operational requirements of large motors and how often they're started and stopped. Obtain all significant load information that may not be motor loads, such as air conditioning and UV disinfection systems. Obtain information on all power transformers so we can incorporate that in the model. And then obtain available short circuit currents from serving electric utilities. Final design and bid done.
Any questions from the board?
Do you have a local?
Santa Tony.
Are y'all working on any projects in the region, South Texas?
I've worked on some, personally, I've worked on some odor control, some of your lift stations here. Did some review on your Robindale expansion, I think.
You're familiar with it? Yeah. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes.
They have a local presence.
Are we allowed to discuss now?
Yes.
Is there, staff and
you're talking about the 5% rule?
No, I'm just in general. If we're looking at two firms that both received the same score mm-hmm. from staff, but one of them is local and has a local office, is that something that we can?
You can consider it.
We can take into account.
Yes.
I mean, so based on the scoring and yeah, you've got two. The two highest scoring, one's local, one's not.
So what do you recommend? The board needs to make a recommendation.
Can I ask you for a recommendation from the staff?
Or yeah, I mean, staff works with these teams, so I would.
Yeah, I would ask you, Cesar or Eli, to what they would recommend. They're ones that evaluate
yep.
the firm.
I think all the presenters, all the firms tonight are highly qualified, and they do the job.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but who do you recommend? I mean,
I must make a recommendation.
Your rankings, you rank half and freeze at 94, or half in KWH at 94, and then freeze at 93, right?
Well, it's our responsibility to make a recommendation. I'm going to make a recommendation that we recommend half and associates, but it's yes,
right.
I second that.
Okay.
Who did?
Anna.
Okay, thank you.
You want me to make a recommendation first? BPV staff requests the board of directors select an engineer firm for the standby backup power specifications and design for various BPU water wastewater facilities and to authorize the general manager and his chief executive officer to negotiate a contract with the selected firm.
Okay, I'll make a.
Yes.
Did you second that, Anna?
I did. I second that.
Okay. All right. So, you got it? Okay. So, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? So the motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ready to go with number 9?
Yes.
9 is a presentation, discussion, and possible action on selection of firms to provide professional engineering services for water and wastewater projects in accordance with the request for qualifications Q083-21. Marie?
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Marie Leal, and I am the Director of Special Projects and Water Wastewater Engineering Planning and Operations. The Brownsville Public Utilities Board Water and Wastewater Department is seeking to select a group of professional engineering firms qualified to provide services necessary to complete studies, master plans, analysis, designs, rehabilitations, and upgrades of the BQB water and wastewater treatment and conveyance infrastructure on a rotation basis. A request for qualifications was advertised in the Brazos Herald on September 26th and October 3rd, 2021, the BPV website, and sent to 43 vendors. On October 18th, 2021, the BPV received statements of qualifications from 18 firms. On October 26th and 27th, 2021, a staff review committee reviewed, scored, and ranked all the SOQs and shortlisted the following 10 firms: Bruce Nichols, Parolo Engineers, AECOM, Black & Veatch, Garber, Hayes & Sawyer, CPNY, Half Associates, Hansen, and Ambiotech. As the projects are assigned, BPUB will negotiate to develop a scope of work and budget on each of the projects and will return to the board for individual contract approvals. BPUB staff recommends authorization for the general manager and chief executive officer to enter into contract negotiations with the selected firms to provide professional engineering services for water and wastewater projects in accordance with the request for qualifications Q83-21. And a full ranking chart should have been placed on your desks for your information.
What we would do is rotate these projects that are coming up between these firms, kind of similar to what the city does. They have a list of consultants that they assign projects to as they come about, and we bring that project back to the board for approval. But it gives us a list to, instead of doing what we just did on every project, we would select these and rotate these projects as they come through.
Okay.
Are they rotated? Is it randomly just go down the list, or is it based on their expertise, their area of expertise and their experience? I mean, do you shortlist, or do you just pick the next one on the
probably,
list?
Probably, I'll ask Marie to comment on that.
It'll be based on their expertise,
yeah.
And they'll be based according to the rankings and the scoring that we gave them on each of the expertise columns on that ranking sheet that you see in front of
okay.
you.
Okay, so we wouldn't assign a project randomly. It'd be based on
under knowledge that they can deliver. Under qualifications.
But that is correct.
And is it we typically have this amount of firms on that preferred,
list, approved list?
Yeah, approved list.
Yeah, there's more than that. This was shortlisted.
This is shortlisted. Right, but we usually have this many on there. I mean,
we usually have 3 to 5 that we
okay
come back to the board.
Is there a reason that we have 10 now? Or
a lot of projects.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
That's why I'm asking.
A lot of projects. If you look on that next page.
Yeah.
So essentially, if you look at some of these projects and they're under the general manager's authority, they can be assigned without having to come to the board. Anything larger than, because these are water, wastewater, larger than 100,000 would come to the board for a decision, just like the other one.
Yeah.
Thanks, you.
Okay, and then a firm would be selected if it's over 100,000.
Yes,
right.
And likely that would require a full RFP since it's something very okay. big, just like the previous one.
Okay.
What this does, it saves us time in having yep. to advertise a separate RFQ for every project. We'll still go to the selected firm. We'll negotiate their contract amount. And if it's over 100,000, it will come back to the board for approval.
All right. So we don't need to select anything here. It would just be to approve the
process,
staff recommendation. The
process that we want to do.
All right. I'll move to approve staff recommendation and authorize the GM and CEO to enter into contract negotiations with a selected firm just to provide professional engineering services for water and wastewater projects in accordance with the request for qualifications QOH3.1.
Second.
We got a second. Added by Senator Lane. Okay. All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And just for the record, abstain on this item.
Yeah, I abstain as well. Jude Benavides.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item 10.
Let me just make a comment.
Sure.
I'm not sure we had a quorum there.
We did.
Who? With Ms. O'Quinn, we did.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, we
did. We do.
Yeah,
yes. I'm sorry. I forgot. Yeah. I didn't see Anna.
No, I was careful. But yeah.
Yeah, we do.
But thanks, sir.
No, we're good. She's on. Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. So I know the mayor dropped off, so.
Right.
Hi, Mom. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mrs. Chris. All right. Item number 10. Presentation, discussion, and possible action on the design and construction services for the Brownsville Public Utilities Board remodel of the existing administration building project and authorization for BPUB management and staff to proceed. Sal?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, the proposed remodel of the existing administration building project consists of remodeling the existing two-story building with approximately 37,549 square feet in area. Modifications under this project may include, but are not limited to, adding additional customer service lane, replacing existing carpet with commercial flooring, and adding or removing office walls for the reallocation of space and other modifications as may be requested within the budget allotted for the project. On August 9, 2021, the BPUB board was presented with several options and costs for the remodeling project, and the board instructed BPUB staff to return and present a prioritized listing of the essential items necessary at the administration building, which ERO architects will now present. Eli Ochoa, ERO president and CEO, will now join us and share the screen for this presentation.
Good evening, Madam Chairman, members of the board. I do have a very quick presentation, and
We can't hear you, Mr. Ochoa.
I am unmuted now. Still can't hear me?
No.
No, sir.
Okay.
How about now?
No.
No.
I can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
A little better.
Is that better? Do I need to maybe turn up the volume?
Yeah. See if we can. Hold on.
Try that. Yeah. See.
Is that
working? Good.
Yeah, that's better.
That's better. Yeah, crank it up.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you very much. I apologize for that. I have a very quick little six-slide presentation for y'all. It's intended, well, let me go ahead and just get it started right now so that we can go ahead and go over the can you all see the, no, there we go. You're seeing the table of contents there. We're going to go over some probable costs of construction. One of the questions that y'all have been asking, we tried to enumerate it a little bit better, is to go over the required remediation and renovation that would be required.
I'm sorry. We can't see your screen yet.
You can't. Okay. Let me try it down here.
Yeah, it's at the bottom of the screen in your WebEx, and you have to share.
Right. Well, okay. Let me try it again.
From Teams.
Yeah, it's a little different. Let me get it here.
Go to the bottom where it says mute or unmute. Right next to it, there should be a button that says share.
Yes, and I am clicking my screen one. I was just wondering, is that not working for you?
No.
No? Okay.
Let
me go ahead and try it one last time here real quick. No.
We're just going to do it here locally. Call you along. Give us 1 second.
Okay. Apologize for that.
No worries.
Can you see this?
No, I cannot. Let me see what's going on here. I can hear y'all, but okay.
Do it to us, right?
He was there.
Is that from y'all's, Marie?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. There's going to be one slight correction that I'm going to make, and I'll just point it out then because it's not going to be on your presentation.
Whenever you're ready, you can just say next slide, and I'll
scroll. Okay, next slide. Next slide. I really apologize for this. It's a little disconcerting for me, but I'm going to go over a very quick table of contents. There's basically six slides. We're going to go over the probable cost of construction for the remediation and renovation of all the different projects that were assessed approximately a year ago. Then we're going to go over the required remediation and renovation of just the main building that is going to be required within the next 2 years. Some of it's already starting to happen, and I'll point that out to y'all. And then what's going to be required through the year 2030. So we did a deferred maintenance program for you, carrying you out to 2030. Then we're going to go over the cost estimates. We'll go over what we call a remodel. And just for y'all's information, if you're going to hear a lot of R words, remediation means that we're going to do a replacement of the system. Renovation means we're going to repair an existing system. And then remodel means that we're going to undergo a complete reorganization, alteration, or renewal. Basically, we're going to remake the interior or the plan of the building. So that's a distinction between when you hear me say remediate, renovate, and remodel, what those mean. And feel free to ask me, because it might be a bit confusing for y'all. Next slide, Marie. What we ended up doing, this was done approximately a year ago, and we took the site, the office building, mechanical building, the drive-through that was desired to be added to your existing building, and then the ATM building, which basically needs a light repaired. But we came up with an estimated cost to do the remediation and renovation of about $5.3 million. This is work that's going to have to be done. About $3 million of it, $3.1 million, is going to have to be done within probably the next 2 years. And I'm going to show you a list here in just a second. But one thing that I do want to point out is you'll see there that we highlighted the office building at $4.8 million. I wanted to just let you know what that building was. And then the difference is approximately $480,000, not $426,000. So it's about $60,000. That's the number that needed to be changed. And you'll see it here in a little bit. But basically, the $481,000 is the addition of the site, the mechanical building, the drive-through building, and the ATM building that need to be renovated and remediated. Next slide, Marie. This is just a very quick little simple slide of the systems that we're going to either have to replace or repair within the next 2 years. The roof covering, the roof drains, air handling units, you have four of them. Actually, I understand one of them just went out, which basically I would say you could pretty much bet that they're all going to be going out within 2 years, if not within the next year alone. HVAC, VAB motors, the duct work is going to have to be replaced. The DX unit or direct expansion AC unit in your IT room. Ceilings, wood doors, cabinetry, vinyl flooring, carpet flooring, and your fire detection and alarm. And we're going to have to replace or repair the window wet seals, a lot of wall paint, wallpaper, generator, site lighting and poles, traffic markings, concrete curbs and gutters, speed bumps, asphalt paving, and concrete driveways. Those are where we're going to end up needing to do some repairs. That alone right there, that list is going to be about $3.1 million in remediation and renovation that needs to be done and will probably be required within the next 2 years. The next slide. Then what's going to happen is between 2024 and 2030, you're going to start having issues with your dry type transformers. There's four of them. We're going to continue to have to replace VAV motors in your mechanical system. Wet standpipe risers will need to be replaced. AC ductwork, the remaining of it. That first list is only part of the work, and the rest of it is going to be done in 2024 to 2030. Interior lightings, electrical panels. Yes, is there a question?
No.
No.
Okay, I'll continue. Your hydraulic elevator, soffits, ceilings, wall paint, wallpaper, exterior doors, cabinetry, sinks, and vinyl carpet and flooring. So that makes up, if we can go to the next slide, you'll see here that we have the very first column are the systems that we're talking about, which is your substructure, which is foundation and everything below. Basically, everything's fine with the foundation. And then the shell, which is the exterior skin, which would be all your windows, exterior walls, your roof. It's the building envelope, basically. And then the interiors, and you'll see there on the interiors, we're about $1 million alone on that. The services are the MEP services, and that also includes vertical conveyance, like your elevator. We're looking at, within the next 2 years, y'all spending about $1.8 million. And then there's some special construction that's required on the site and the building, in and around the building site, which both of those total to about $130,000. That brings your total there for the year 2021 through 2023 of about $3.1 million in maintenance costs that you're going to have to incur. So at the very least, this works as a way of helping prepare budgetary-wise, because those systems are going to start going out. And then in 2024 and 2030, we're looking at adding approximately another $1.7 million. And if we go to, oh, this slide, if you add those two together, that's another thing that was fixed. You have about $4.8 million. And in those $4.8 million, that's going to be work that's going to be required to remediate and renovate. Basically, it's maintenance. And then I wanted to show y'all a remodel, and remodel is a complete reorganization. And you'll see that the difference is only about $480,000 between the two. And what the point I was trying to make is, if you go the remodel route, everything that's in the first two columns gets taken care of in that third column. And if we go to the next slide, I'll start showing how we would basically remodel the first floor into customer service, and you'll see it takes up a major part of the first floor plan. We'd move NERC, fuel purchasing, engineering, risk management, and then we'd maintain the lobby that you currently have right now. So we will remodel. Nothing's been designed yet, but we know that we have the square footage that is required by your departments based on just a whole series of meetings that we've had with each of the departments, making sure that we have the space that's required for your current employees and then also for future growth of each of those departments. But when they grow, they'll grow in a very systematic, organized way and not, hey, take over this office or you go move over there and take that office because it's available, in a real laissez-faire type of way. So if we go to the next slide, this is how the second floor would be remodeled. And you'll see up there, we basically have the human resources, environmental. We have the digital communications, the recovery. And then we have a whole series of conference rooms. And one of the things we did to try to mitigate some of the space that was required is we took all the conference rooms and put them on circulation spaces Now, this is all private circulation, so it's not public. This is circulation that's for the employees. And there would be a series of conference rooms, and they would be checked out for a particular time whenever somebody needed a conference room. And we did this to save quite a bit of space of conference area in individual departments that would maybe only have a 30% utilization rate. And we really want to try to get the utilization of spaces up somewhere around 75-80%, not much more than 80, because then it's too efficient. But we do want to get up there so that we're getting the best use of the money that is spent. So in a nutshell, if we went back to slide number 6, Marie, that's what we mean by the first column is basically all repairs and fixes. Second column is repairs and fixes. When you add those two up, it's about $4.8 million. And to do a total remodel, which would include all the fixes, would be about $5.2 million. And so we wanted to give you this information so y'all could make a value-based decision on how you wanted to proceed. I'm here to answer any questions if you ask. And I'll turn it back over to you, Marie.
Thank you.
I do think we're at a point, you know, we're into the new service, new built the annex now, and this building, our current building down there, is at a point where we've got a lot of maintenance to do on that, and now's the time if we're going to do it to address that building. We pushed it off a little bit to get into the new building, but we're at it again. This is another one we've been to the board with that we're at a point now that we need to make a decision what we want to do, if we just want to fix the things or actually get it in a working shape for the rest of the employees that are there.
John, I apologize if this has already been discussed previously, but so are these departments that weren't contemplated for the new building?
They were contemplated to stay here.
They were from the beginning. They were contemplated.
Yeah, we just don't have enough room in the new building.
Okay, so the new building was designed in such a way that it wouldn't have any customer service
customer service was always going to stay at the old. But to be remodeled and redone and. Use the boardroom and, you know, those
right.
things.
Right, but it was always the plan to keep customer service here. And HR, which
yes.
HR takes up a big chunk
of the second
floor. All of it is in the state.
So Marie, the difference between a full remodel, the option was about $500,000 again?
About $500,000, yes, sir. And that's why it's just like, wow, if we're going to be going through all this expense, how many times – have you ever heard to be able to do a whole remodel for $400,000? And that's the reason why I just felt it was important to bring that up, because they're so close to each other. And basically doing this work, you close out all your construction you're going to need for administration and service for the next 40 years.
Right.
And so I just felt it was important that we bring these up. We brought them up to staff, and we brought it up to the executive committee, and it just seemed to make sense that, you know, we at least present this information for y'all to make a decision.
I have a question for Ms. Leon.
Yes,
go ahead, Art.
When y'all were planning the new building, you all planned back then to keep this old structure?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And you planned that based on?
Well, it's a good structure. It just needs some renovation.
I think it's a lovely structure the way it is. I wouldn't put a dollar in it, but it's a very functional building. It is,
except for the things that are going to failing that you can't see.
No, I understand.
Yeah, I mean it's not going to be.
The CFO here. There's money set aside, another $5 million for this building after we spend.
$1 million for renovation. And that's $500,000 for renovation. So combined $2.6 million. So if it's going to cost them either $4.8 or $5.2 million, they have to go around some projects or
John, I think the building is very functional, and I'm not talking about maybe the chillers or the HVAC systems are old and all that. It looks like they've kept it up very nicely. There's a lot of good space in there.
It is.
And then you haven't moved everybody into the big building, but you already, I guess y'all had made plans to keep this building and use it.
Correct.
But
one point I'd like to bring, Mr. Drangonis, yes, it is an exceptionally well-kept building. However, from multiple, several years of interviews with the different departments that are staying here, their form does not fit the function of their departments.
Well, that makes sense.
And that was the reason for the remodeling.
But I'm concerned that the finances, an additional $5 million, the new building was north of $25 million. It's a lot of money, and I know Mike's concern for his board is he going to find this money.
Now, we're going to be short either 2.1 or 2.6.
So what are your thoughts, Mike? Where's the money coming from?
It's doable. I mean, we actually generated a lot of surplus.
Well, I mean, there are some areas that you can come back into. I mean, cut back with it. I know we've already addressed one.
We'd have to cut back somewhere else and use that money. I mean, you're investing in something for the next 40 years. It's
But, Mary, right now you all don't need $5 million. Right now you all need how much commitment do you need?
In discussions with the architects, of course, the first plan would be approval from the board for them to get started with the design, and there'll be options. Once the design is complete, they can come back to the board and they can give us the realistic construction costs, and then we can also address it different ways. We can address it in phases, and you can do the first floor first and then subsequently the second floor, and so those are several options that we can bring back to the board at the time that the design.
But right now you're asking us which track to go. We're going to go full remodel, or are we going to do
right.
That is correct.
It hurts, but as long as we can piece this through and we can work with Mike to try to find, and get this through, I mean, with an additional 10%,
yeah.
I mean, it's just.
Yeah. I mean, that said, if they come back in the full remodel, that estimate's off, and they say, hey, it's not 5, now it's 8, we can say, well, then go back to.
Then go back to the drawing board. Absolutely.
Or do the first floor.
Well, let's go with Marie's, Ms. Leon's recommendation. I mean, let's get the design and the initial cost and the first floor.
We just need to move on and get that. We're at a point now to get it going because the people are left there. And there's.
So what would be your recommendation, John?
Prove us to proceed with the total renovation in phases and bring it back to the board. Start off with the design and then the guaranteed maximum price or whatever.
Renovation remodel?
It's just remodel.
Remodel
at approximately $5.2 million.
That's on our view.
Well, I mean, I'll make a recommendation that we move forward based on the recommendation of the administration that we're going to they're going to move forward with the design, initial cost, first floor, second floor.
On the remodel.
Yeah. That's all we're asking for right now.
Okay.
So that's my recommendation. Right. Right.
Yeah, get us to the point of making a decision. You're going to, next year you're going to do the first floor, second year you're going to do the.
But there's some costs associated with what we're going to do right now. The hiring
is. Yes.
So.
Which will always come back to the board.
Okay. All right.
So I have a first from Mr. Rendon.
Second.
Second from Mr. Sambayo. Any further discuss? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Is it okay to still with us?
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, Eli.
Good night. Thank you. Yeah. All right. Item number 11. I'm getting punchy. It's late. Consideration and possible approval of appointment of a grounds and public utilities board representative to the South Coast Regional Water Authority 2022. I'll open the table for nominations. Second. First, from Science. Second, Patricio. Any further discussion?
Big thanks.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None heard. Item number 12, election of board officers for 2022. How do we want to handle this?
We have the current slate in your packet, and then we up the wishes of the board. Yeah, you can recommend.
I don't know. She's made a recommendation. I'd like to make a comment after her recommendation.
Okay, there's a first right now from Ms. Lane. There a second? Ms. O'Quinn, are you speaking? I see you moving. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay, currently, did you hear the status right now on the call?
No, can you repeat that again because you cut off?
Yes, we're nominating, we're on item number 12, election of board officers. And currently, yes. Langley has nominated Ms. Sines, Sandra Sines, for board chair. There's a first. We need a second.
I second that.
All right, there's a second for Ms. O'Quinn. I have a first and a second. Discussion. Go ahead, Ms.
I'd just like to make the comment of discussion that this last year has been really a difficult year with the COVID. I came on board in the summer, and there was no engagement with board members. It was very difficult. Everything was done on Zoom. It seems to me like we're just kind of coming together as a board, and we didn't see each other. We just kind of saw each other on these videos. I don't think it's unfortunate that Dr. Benavides didn't really get to completely fulfill his perhaps it's not necessarily his duties, but as board chair. I think Sandra's been there, and she knows exactly what is going on with the board, but that's just my comment. It was a year and a half that everyone kind of disappeared.
I'm flying on the island of misfit toys.
Okay. That's my comment.
So the second
is going to come pick me up now. No, I think it was an honest discussion. I appreciate your comment. I think Science sat in for me a couple times as well, so she's very more than qualified. This is something the board needs to decide, and I'm not going to take it one way or the other. People need to vote what they think is best for individuals as well as the as BTV, and I think we're going to be fine with anybody that it happens.
Right.
Not as urgent an issue to be not make it. So I have a first and a second. There was a comment. Any further comments? Okay, I'll call the vote. All in favor, please say aye.
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 And Ms. O'Quinn votes. You vote aye, correct? You're not using you seconded, so you did. Any opposed?
Right.
None heard? All right. Congratulations, Science. You'll be next chair. You're welcome.
But I'm looking forward to working with.
Absolutely.
I'll open the floor for the vice chair nominations.
Mr. Sampaio.
I second that.
Wow. I believe that was a recommendation, was that a motion, or was that a question?
That was a question, maybe?
Yeah.
The only thing I would say is I think traditionally the option has always been given to the next in line. So I know you're making that recommendation, but if
giving it back to you, Sandra.
If there's I'm just saying if there's anybody else who's more senior who is interested in the vice chair. No, only in terms of time on the board. I'm more than happy to accept the nomination, but I would open it up to sit with that exception. If there's anybody else who would prefer to serve in that capacity, then
There's a, so that's a motion? Yeah. I need to know if that's a motion or if that's a question. That's a motion?
Okay.
Is that a motion? Yes, motion. And Ms. O'Quinn, you seconded? You said, Ms.
O'Quinn, I did. Yes, I did.
All right, so I have a first and a second on the table. Any further discussion relating to Mr. Sampaio becoming our next vice chair? No further discussion heard. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Unheard. Congratulations, Mr. Sampaio, Mr. Vice Chair.
Congratulations. For
secretary position. I have a motion from the future chair, Ms. Simons, to maintain Ms. Langley as secretary. Is there a second?
Second that.
There's a second for Mr. Rendon.
I'll second.
And a third for Ms. O'Flynn. Any further discussion? Unheard. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Unheard. Congratulations on maintaining the secretary. Is that it? Personal advisors. Yeah, it's been a heck of a year. So I appreciate the staff's efforts as the outgoing chair real quick. Thank you for the honor of serving. And I look forward to continuing to serve as a board member and as your SRWA never seeming to end representative. All right.
Thank you.
Question. The secretary was Ms. Sines, and the second was Mr. Rendon. All right. Anything else?
That's it.
All right. Thank you. I'll entertain motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We stand and sit. Adjourn. Right. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.